Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We're going to get our next guest on the line. He is a good friend, and he's a good man for coming on this morning. This last-minute interview that Casey scheduled yesterday.
Yeah.
Fight World is now streaming on Netflix.
It's really good.
And he's been all over the world.
Yeah.
Trying different styles and cultures and meeting those people and finding out who they are and what they do and why they do what they do. And he's a wonderful actor. We love him. Please welcome to the show this morning, Frank Grillo.
Hey.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. What, did somebody drop out so you needed to leave?
No, we made special room for you this late in the day because we appreciate the time shift. So I know it sucks getting up, but you get up fairly early, right?
Oh, no, yeah. I've been in the gym since 6 o'clock.
So there you go. If only it showed, Frank, that you hit the gym a lot. I mean, you're in impossibly good shape. We hate your guts, but we also love you. So, hey, the show is awesome, by the way, and I know it's a passion project of yours. I was a fan of your show, Kingdom, and that, you know, that obviously dealt with the fighting world as well. But this is around the world examining fighters. And the culture and the legend, it's much deeper than people might suspect. It's really sort of inspiring.
I appreciate that. I really do. And it kind of, you know, the genesis is Anthony Bourdain, rest his soul. I was continue to be a huge, you know, Bourdain fan. And the more I traveled, and the more I was training in different gyms and kind of created these friendships and these brotherhoods, if you would, I just got inspired to kind of this idea. Instead of food culture, let's explore fight culture around the world. And, you know, it turned into something much more than a passion project for me. It changed my DNA. It did.
You can tell that you are, you know, that you are in these different areas and you are connecting with these people. It's almost, there's a common language with people who engage in this, and wherever you go, you seem to tap into it instantly.
It's weird, and it is. That's the through line of what I found just training and being in fight gyms. Basically, most of my life, and how beautiful all these people are, and how aside from the actual fighting in the ring, everything else is a community that is based in trust. And there's no prejudice. You know, I was in gyms in Israel with Palestinians and Christians and Jews, and nobody cared about all the stuff that the United Nations can't seem to figure out. These guys go into gyms, and all the shit that everybody's worried about, you know, they it goes away. It goes away. Transcends all of it.
Well,
and fighters aren't brutal. They're not. They're poets. They really are.
Well, there's competition, obviously, and there's technique and learning these things and trying to perfect that technique. But I think step number one, and what I see from you, Frank, is respect for each other when you're stepping in to learn or to compete. Either one, you know.
Yep, that's exactly it. It's respect. It's respect because you each know what it takes mentally, physically, spiritually, philosophically to do that, to get into a ring or a cage or on a mat. And then when you're done, you pick each other up and you walk off together. You know, that's why the thing with Khabib and McGregor was so unfortunate.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's atypical. It's atypical of what happens after a fight.
Well, somebody says that one of the fighters that you speak with, he, you know, says the object is not to beat someone else, but to beat yourself, to challenge yourself.
Right.
And that there's a shared experience. It is eye opening, and the Anthony Bourdain thing is an interesting connection because he himself is a martial artist, and
really, yep. And I had a fantasy that because he's a jiu-jitsu guy, and I've, you know, been involved in jiu-jitsu a long time, and I had this fantasy that maybe I'd get him to come with me. We would go and do something together, and unfortunately, he passed away. But he is the genesis of the whole thing.
So the selections are interesting. Mexico City, Thailand, Myanmar, Senegal, Israel, for Krav Maga. You're getting a sampling of all these different things, and each brings sort of a, you know, for some, for example, the Senegalese wrestlers, there's such a...
Yeah.
there's such a sense of pride and accomplishment. It's a fascinating thing. Were you so as you're sampling all these different fighting styles, and you yourself, you're a sponge. You clearly see you picking up things and so on and so forth. What caught you from out of left field that you were going into? Okay, we're gonna check this out. But then when you went and experienced it, you had no idea it was as impactful as it was going to be.
I got to tell you, I think the Krav Maga, because I'm so used to in Beverly Hills Krav Maga, housewives go and try to learn to defend themselves.
Right.
And it's cool. It's interesting. And it's, everybody should learn, self-defense. But when I went there and I was with these special forces guys who Krav Maga is a real thing,
yeah,
that, they're in tunnels in the Gaza Strip fighting hand to hand. And when I learned how deadly and how fast and how brutal it is, it was frightening. Absolutely. I'm never really afraid. I was afraid.
Really?
It's scary.
It was funny because the first time you were in here, you sort of Preston, took Krav Maga, and you sort of...
jokingly.
Yeah, jokingly. It was fun.
Yeah, because I trained for 6 years. I earned a black belt in it. But Frank, you go, that's kind of that's that workout thing.
Right.
And I was like, no, not really. He's like, whoa, man, easy. Yeah. It was really funny, actually. But, I've had my trainer and owner of a gym out here, Ernie, has traveled to Israel many times and trained with the military there. And, yes, it's a way of life for those guys.
Oh, it's amazing. And they're amazing people. They're surrounded by 25 or so hostile nations.
Yep.
And, you don't understand until you're there what it is to be Israeli. I mean, and I asked, I think it's in the show, I asked the mayor of Jerusalem to define Israeli people in one word, and he said fight.
It's so cool. I have to ask you, because a lot of times the fight cultures are born out of perhaps there's a connection to religion or there's a connection to necessity, as with the Krav Maga.
Right.
did you see a clear line of delineation? What makes them different? What makes them similar?
As far as all of the styles that I
right.
They're all similar in the sense that they all are born out of necessity. They're all these guys all started to fight for a specific reason, mostly to get themselves out of an impoverished situation.
Yeah.
And I think the Israelis are different in the sense that, they're protecting their lives.
Yeah.
So, but all the other ones, and I was in Brazil too, unfortunately Brazil didn't get on the air yet, but all of the other ones, it's all of these places, the favelas, in Senegal, you saw how impoverished it was. In Thailand, obviously, Myanmar, really struggling financially. All these people, all these kids, all these women, they're fighting to make money for their families, to get themselves out of that situation. So it is a clear through line.
It means everything.
Yeah, and in fact, I was watching it last night. I watched the first episode, which it's set in Mexico City. And it's about boxing, and I mean in that sport it's fists only, right?
Yeah.
Rather than being able to take anybody to the ground or use your feet or whatever. I really enjoyed the episode, but I enjoyed watching you in that episode because you were like a little kid in a candy store. You really looked like you were enjoying yourself down there.
Yeah, I was. I didn't realize how affected I was going to be. And going to Mexico, standing in that stadium with Julio Cesar Chavez, one of my, God, boxing heroes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Nacho Barros. I was so humbled. I felt so small. And yet I didn't let that get in the way of how excited I was. So it was an honor to be around the kid fighting in Thailand or Myanmar or Julio Cesar Chavez. It was all an honor for me because they're all doing basically the same thing. Julio Cesar Chavez at one time was that kid fighting out of the jungle. It was the same thing. Well,
It's wild because I follow you on Instagram and I was watching the path as you were going on it to all these locations as this was being filmed. And you could see, there was a metaphysical sort of thing that was taking place with you as you're experiencing all these cultures. So you got this show, which, again, congratulations, it's awesome.
Thank you.
You have Boss Level with Joe Carnahan.
Mel Gibson, yeah.
When is that coming out?
That'll probably be a summer movie for next summer, probably an August film. It's a really fun action movie with me, Mel, and Naomi Watts.
How cool is that to be with Mel Gibson, to be with Naomi, to be with these people? Does that blow your freaking mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's because I produced the movie too, and it's a big movie. And but the first day I'm on set with Mel, I mean, come on, it's Mel. You know, it's the Road Warrior.
Yeah,
and we since have become friends, and I went out to dinner with him and his wife the other night, and when I leave, I still say to myself, son of a gun, that's Mel Gibson.
Yeah, how could you not? It's very cool. And Joe Carnahan is great. He's got to be one of your best friends at this point.
He's my partner. He's my business partner. So we produce. We have a company called War Party. This is the Boss Level is our fourth film in 2 years that we'll have produced and created, and then Fight World obviously is a War Party production as well. So yeah, I'm with him all day.
Hey, Frank, did you talk to Mel at all about the jiu-jitsu that was used in
Lethal Weapon?
In Lethal Weapon. That was the first time that had ever been used on film before.
That's Hegan Machado. He still trains with him.
Really?
He still trains with him. In fact, we put Hegan in Boss Love. He's got a small role. But, Mel still rolls around at
That's
63
cool.
years old. Yeah.
And Michelle Yeoh is in the Boss Level as well, correct?
Who?
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Legend. Yeah. How did I forget her? Yeah. Legend.
Yeah.
Legend.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah, so I with all of your travels, not just with Fight World, but for let's just say the last 20 years of your life, in fact, in the episode last night, you needed an interpreter to talk back and forth with these boxers and these trainers in Mexico, and I would imagine you needed these interpreters all over the world. But the fight is an international language, is it not?
That's right. Fight and love. Right?
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, that would have been uncomfortable with those guys.
Yeah. Meet a woman and not know how to speak the language, but you know what you're saying to each other. It's the same thing. It's fighting.
So you have a whole bunch of stuff coming out. Obviously, Wheelmen, which we you were on before, and love that. You have a whole bunch of things in the works. You also have Point Blank, a remake you're making of that French film.
It was me and Anthony Mackie and Marcia Gay Harden for Netflix. Yeah, we just finished that. A movie called Donnybrook.
How cool is it to be back back with Anthony Mackie again?
Oh, it was fun, and this one's a true two-hander. It's him and I. It's a real great thriller, action thriller, and it's him and I throughout the whole film. So we get to banter a lot, and we had a lot of fun.
It's so cool because when you first came in here, and you were sort of like with the Purge and everything, and stuff was just starting to churn, and then it's just been on a conveyor belt. But it couldn't happen to a nicer guy because your heart's always been in it. It's just fantastic to see this happening.
Thank you, brother.
And by the way, Donnybrook is premiering in the Philly Film Festival. It'll be playing here in town, which is really cool.
Yeah, we were in Toronto. We just won a festival in Austin, Texas. It's a really dark. It's a little bit polarizing. It's really dark and unapologetic, and I play pure evil.
That's okay.
You've been doing that.
That'll work. Let me suggest something to you. I'll float this out, and you can take with it what you will. There was a great movie years ago that I think you would be perfect for a remake. Charles Bronson film called Hard Times. Do you remember this movie?
I remember it. We were trying to get the movie, Joe Carney and I were trying to get trying to get the rights to it. Not kidding you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a guy. Yeah.
bare knuckle, street fighting around the early, during the Depression. Great movie. James Coburn. Yeah.
Yep. Well, all the men of Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, I apologize because I know you're mid workout right now, and just a couple of weeks ago there was this thing that was making its way all over the internet about Mark Wahlberg's workout and dining schedule, and he was getting up at like 2 a.m. and doing this crazy workout. I don't know if you saw that or not, and if you did. What are your thoughts on that?
He's a pussy.
I know Mark. As far as I know, Mark goes to bed at like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and he does. And he lives this very specific lifestyle. The guy is talk about a machine. I mean, he is one of the smartest guys in this business. And
he's a great guy. We've had him on the show a couple of times, and he's the real deal. You guys are of a kind.
Yeah, he's a special dude. I mean, he really. He took an opportunity that he got a long time ago, and he ran with it. And he's a powerhouse, man.
Let me ask you this, because when I see something like that, it makes me sick to my stomach. to see somebody live a life like that, because it is so out of the norm for me, and it seems like he is torturing himself. And I would imagine that the way you live your life is very similar, very strict diet, and I'm the opposite of that. And believe me, I'm not looking down my nose at all. I actually look at it
with admiration
and a touch of jealousy, because I don't feel like I have that in me. And I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, some people are just built that way, and some people are not.
Yeah, I've always been like super disciplined when it comes to certain things. And then other things, listen, don't kid yourself. Marcus had a great life where he didn't go to bed at 8 o'clock in the morning. But now he's a grown man.
Yep.
He's a grown man with a big business and a bunch of kids. And so but he's always been disciplined when he wanted to. I remember a long time ago. And that's how I've been. I've been, if I need to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and come and train, it's not a problem. I do it. I eat the way I eat because it's just the way I eat.
Yep.
I live my life very disciplined, again, in some aspects. And there are parts where I go, why can't I get this under control? I'm so disciplined.
Everyone's like that, and we tend to forget that everyone has their things. But so what's the word on Fight World? I assume Netflix is happy with it.
I'm one of those guys who, like, I'm not, you know, I kind of leave it up to the movie gods. I think people have been responding really even more positively than I had imagined, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
But, if I get the call from Netflix that we're going to go and do another season, that's great. If not, I think it stands alone as a piece that is really interesting,
Something, so we'll see what happens. Yeah, something to be very proud of. It really, really wonderful, and we're thrilled for you.
Yep.
I appreciate it. You guys have always been great. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll always support you, man. You're a good person. It's streaming now on Netflix, and it is called Fight World, and Frank is the man. So, dude, thanks for checking in. Go back with your sweat,
guys.
And go do your thing, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, brother?
Thanks, guys.
All right, Frank Grillo!
Yeah.
And like I said, that movie Donnybrook is going to be here in Philadelphia, and it is part of the Philadelphia Film Society Festival. So you can be a part of it. And we actually have details on presidency.com where to get your tickets and all that good stuff.
Awesome.
He's great.
He's just a good dude.
He is a good dude. When we took our last vacation, I listened to the last occasion that we had him in the studio, and it was such a great interview. And I couldn't stop. And I lived it, Dottie.
Yeah.
But I couldn't stop listening to it. It was so, it was such a great conversation.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, I'd like to thank Jack Frost Mountain for sponsoring today's podcast. We are headed back to Jack Frost on Friday, March 1st for our 13th annual Preston and Steve Cardboard Classic. Go to WMMR.com to score lift tickets for just $20 and for details on how to register your sled to compete for cash and prizes. From WMMR and JFBB, where the snow comes first.
French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville has everything you need for the great outdoors and beyond. All the big name brands, they have them. Visit FrenchCreekOutfitters.com for additional info. French Creek Outfitters, why take a chance with anybody else?
Taking time for yourself isn't selfish, it's self-care. Schedule a massage or facial at your local Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa with a relaxing massage or refreshing facial for just $59.95 for first-time guests. Visit one of their 50 area locations or handandstone.com.
Screwed up Valentine's Day? Diamonds will get you out of the doghouse. Make it up to her with Stevens Angel Heart Diamond Necklace for only $128. Online at IHateStevensSinger.com or at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Stevens Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Even if you don't know our next guest, you know our next guest. He wrote the Oscars for 23 years. He's a guy behind a lot of stuff that you've heard and seen over the years.
Legendary.
Six-time Emmy Award winner. His birthday is in 3 days.
Yes.
He's excited about that, I'm sure. And his show, A Sign of the Times, is premiering at the Delaware Theater Company. Please welcome Mr. Bruce Phelan.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Nice.
The original Pit Ham.
The original Pit Ham right here in our studio. I didn't even mention the Hollywood Squares, of course, where you spent a number of years.
I did, 6 years to the left of Whoopi, if that's possible.
Yeah.
That's right. These days, it'd be very difficult to get to the left or right. You know, Bruce, I have to say, a lot of times we meet people and I'm like, I hope they are the way we want them to be. And this is a compliment. You are Bruce Valanche, and Mike, it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, very cool.
Because I'm frequently mistaken for Michael Moore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He would wear red glasses.
Yes, he doesn't have your fashion sense.
And I've never had a baseball hat on in my life, you know.
Yeah.
Even when I played baseball.
Michael Moore. Well, there you go.
I know, I get that. I like that. And Amy Schumer. I get her. Hey, just because she's pregnant, I'm convinced. Okay.
And you're wearing a classic one of your classic T-shirts.
I'm wearing
Bruce Valanche, yes.
Oh, it tells a story. So you have to really kind of see. It's different kinds of asses. Jack, kick, dumb.
Badass. And smart.
Yes. You know,
I like it. Hey, about the red glasses, how many sets do you have at home, on the go?
Yeah. When I was on Squares, I had different glasses for every show.
Yeah.
So I had hundreds of pairs of glasses. And
you had a sponsor of sorts?
Was the problem.
You were picking up the cost.
I was doing it. And when the prescription changed, I realized I had to take a second mortgage. So I settled on red because Sally Jesse Raphael, who was the red glasses queen, had retired. And so I thought, okay, I've got this market open. And so now it's just, I have a few.
Okay.
I keep looking for exotic red glass frames.
Well, we're thrilled you're here because it's a sign of the times. Is your musical?
It is,
and I think the idea of being able to see a musical, you know, on its way to Broadway is an awesome thing. It's almost like seeing a director's cut of something.
That's,
you know,
true.
And you're getting all of that stuff that goes into making theater wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so, let us in on what the whole concept behind the sign of the times is.
It's a musical about a girl in Columbus, Ohio in 1965 who goes to New York and walks into the world of Mad Men. And she, of course, is objectified and, you know, taken advantage of and has all these adventures. And by the end of the show, she's become one of the early feminists. So it's about a woman finding herself. And when we started doing it, we had no idea that Me Too was actually going to happen.
Right.
And when Me Too happened, we suddenly realized, oh, my God, we're relevant. Holy shit. Is this allowed for a musical? Can you be relevant?
Yeah.
However, the music is all from Petula Clark from the mid-60s.
And awesome.
It's all the Petula's catalog. She didn't write it, but it's all of her stuff. And so it's all familiar music. So I ask people to think Mamma Mia. Please think Mamma Mia. Don't think Mamma Mia 2 necessarily.
Right.
Mamma Mia 1, you can
I got
certainly
you.
Think. Because it's all songs that you know in a story that's brand new.
Well, when you started, your desire, reading about you and about your early days, you wanted to basically be a Neil Simon. You wanted to,
I did. I wanted to be Zero Mostel. I wanted to be, you know, one of those Jackie Gleason with the fat comic. Because I was a fat kid, and I thought, this is funny. I could be this, like, the sidekick of the girl or whatever. And that was that. And I was a child actor.
Were you, in fact, a model for Lane Bryant?
I was a model for Lane Bryant. I was a charming chub. Lane Bryant, you know, specializes in large women.
Right.
And there apparently were not enough of them. So they went into a large child line.
Okay.
And I was one of the poster child, the large child.
You could not get away with that classification these days.
Stylish stout. That was the other one.
Stylish stout.
Yeah, you graduated. Then I became a husky.
Yes.
You know, which is neither man nor boy. It's just you're in that nether world where nothing fits you.
True, yeah.
So I was a child model and I was a child actor, but I was never a child star, or we'd be having this conversation in rehab. So I kind of moved into writing and I began that as a career, and I've never stopped performing. In fact, I'm performing while I'm here plugging Saturday night in Peddler's Village.
It's at the
Cock and Bull.
Both of the shows.
I have some acquaintance too. I'll be at the Cock and Bull on Saturday night, 8:30 in Peddler's Village, telling stories and doing my one man extravaganza, which is about all the stuff I've done in show business.
Which is voluminous. So
it is voluminous. It's a ridiculous career.
But it's funny because by in a circuitous way you got to where you wanted to be.
I know.
Yeah.
I figured that. Well, you know that. That was how Woody Allen and Mel Brooks did it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, I mean, I could see you could just be an annoying Jewish person like me and become a big actor.
Well,
that hasn't happened. I mean, I did Hairspray for 2 years. I became a big actress.
Right. So. Which is a great, so, you know, a musical, and as of late on TV, they've been presenting them, I think,
They do them live.
They do them live, and I think a lot of people have been turned on to. I love going to see musicals. I love going to see my one issue with many of the
and we talked about this, Preston, is that the theaters that you go to see them in were constructed, many of them, like in the turn of last century.
Sure.
And the seats were made for people of that time.
That is true.
And my knees are on someone else's head as you're watching.
Right.
It's uncomfortable. But, you know, when you go and see it and you see an actual, they just, Preston, mm-hmm. you were over in London and saw a live theater.
Yeah, I went to
There's
see
There's nothing
the,
like it.
Yeah, the play that goes wrong. And
that's hysterical.
It was so much fun.
It really is.
I love going to live shows. Funny. I don't do it nearly enough. But it's such a great experience, and it's got to be for the people on stage. It has to be.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you hear about people saying that theater is where they would even. You know, this is the real feeling.
Right.
I get that. I totally get that.
It's live and it's connecting with an actual real person up there, and it's on an intimate scale. So I mean, even when it's big, it's still on a more intimate scale than film or you know, or going to a hockey arena for a concert.
There's a different vibe. So you got started. You were working. I guess were you writing for the Chicago Tribune?
I was writing for the Chicago Tribune. I met Bette Midler, who was starting out. She was on Broadway in Fiddler on the Roof, playing one of the daughters.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, she was at Seitel.
She was doing the other stuff on the side, right?
Right. Well, she would go to a little club and do stuff afterwards, and then she came to Chicago to do that act, and that was when I met her. Somebody told me I should go see her, and I wrote about her, and I wrote a column, and she liked the column. She said, "You're funny." I said, "Well, you should talk more on stage," and she said, "You got any lines?" And that was the beginning.
And that you were off and running.
From the Paleozoic period,
I
started writing. And then she went and she couldn't get a gig, so she answered an ad in one of the show business magazines in New York to sing at a gay bathhouse.
Yes.
Turkish bath. And that was that kind of...
The legend was born.
Well, she became kind of a destination resort.
Yeah, and when Barry Manilow came into the picture?
That was when Barry was her piano. Barry came into the picture on the very first night at the Tubbs, which was what we call the baths, at the Tubbs, when her piano player came down with mono. Remember mono?
Yeah, I do remember mono.
You know, it was such a pleasant
right?
disease. You got it, cured. It wasn't,
right.
But you know, he got mono. So now you know everything's deadly, right? And it was, okay, it's mono. Don't kiss me. You won't get mono. Okay. So he got mono, and he called Barry, who was a friend of his. And Barry came and subbed, and he had no idea. You know, he was just sitting playing at the piano and looking at her, and there's a little video, and he's like, his mouth is just agape. But what's going on?
Well,
and he signed on. He said afterwards, he said, "I'm going to be a music director. That's it. You're too good. I can't let go of you."
People don't remember that her show and that the presentation at that time was just she was telling stories, and she had the sass and the whole thing. And then so you also worked on Divine.
I
Madness.
Did all of the stuff. Yeah, I Midlerized everything.
Midlerized everything.
Yeah.
And so you're
to this day
off and running. Writing. You've written for so many other comedians, and you've you became. Heck, there was a documentary called Get Bruce.
That's right? True.
Yeah,
I know, produced by Harvey Weinstein.
What?
Who never laid a hand on. Really? Screw me too. Why not me? That's my
why
hashtag.
Not me?
Oh my really?
I didn't even put that together, but yeah, I guess that's the case.
Come on with the open bathrobe. I'm here.
I wanted to ask about writing for the Oscars telecast. Are you the one that's responsible for the celebrities? They come up and you know, have to read a few lines.
I do a lot of that. Yeah.
Now, with that, have you seen great lines have you written just destroyed by somebody who couldn't deliver it properly?
Yeah.
Had to have, right?
Yeah, it happens.
It just
all the
happens.
Time. It's, well, you know, most of these movie stars are not used to being working live.
Right.
I mean, the whole Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway thing. I mean, Warren has rarely done anything where he didn't do a second take.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was stuck up there with that. But the problem is they don't really know who they are when they're on stage. They haven't got there's no Keanu Reeves persona.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
I mean, there's no Johnny Depp persona.
Right.
I mean, Johnny Depp hasn't played the palace as Johnny Depp. You know, it's like Billy Crystal knows who he is when he's on stage, and
right.
Whoopi knows who she is, and I used to say Shirley MacLaine knows who she is, and she knows who she was. So
right.
It's much easier.
Yeah.
But so that's when those things happen. You try not to give them stuff that they can go down in flames with. Sometimes they want to do that. They want to show you it. My worst was when was Keanu actually, because we tried to do a Bill and Ted thing. You know?
Okay,
I mean, and these. Like,
do you remember the joke that he botched?
I don't.
Okay.
You know, it's blocked from, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, analysts have built swimming pools on the money I've spent blocking this joke.
Right. So I can imagine, though, because and as things have gotten over the years and the ratings have steadily declined for the Academy Awards, just because there's just a lot more on to watch, yeah. And people forget about it and they shift it around. But the focus of the planet was on, especially when you did, for example, the year that City Slickers won and Polanski did the one on push-up. You were riffing with Billy Crystal and creating all those lines that were coming up, and it was one of the high watermarks in Oscars telecast history.
We won an Emmy for that.
Yeah, just amazing.
That was why it's very meta to win an Emmy for an Oscar. I've done it twice, and it gets more meta as you go along.
It is weird when you'll see the director of the Oscars win an Emmy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, exactly, yeah. right.
It's just a weird thing. Right.
And then propose to his girlfriend.
Exactly. Oh, that's right. But so over the years, writing on that and the different encounters and the backstage stuff, how kinetic is it? How much is done on the fly? I assume that was a rarity where you had that opportunity.
Ever since then, we planned on things. I mean, you discover that the host is on pretty much once in every act of the show. And there are about 18 acts of the thing. So maybe you'll skip an act. So you see where the host is in the show, what they're following.
Right.
And so you have an idea. If you put the host after a documentary, and let's say Michael Moore is nominated, the odds are something will happen during that award presentation that the host can comment on, which is exactly what happened with Steve Martin that year when Michael won and they began booing him because he did some Iraq joke or a reference to the war, and the stagehands began booing him, and Steve came on. We were sitting in the wings.
Sure.
And we said, well, we have to do something with this. And so we all began throwing jokes, and it was a great group that year. Rita Rudner was one of the writers.
Wow.
And Dave Barry was one of the writers, and we were just shouting jokes at Steve. And so Michael Moore left the stage, and there was a commercial, and Steve came out after the commercial and said, so sweet backstage that the stagehands are helping Michael Moore into the trunk of his car.
And that's got to be that's
my absolute favorite that was not on the Oscars, was on the Tony Awards.
Okay.
And it was because CBS carries the Tonys, they want CBS TV stars to be on.
Right.
So, of course, they said we had to have LL Cool J, when you think Broadway, you think LL Cool J.
Because he's on NCIS Los Angeles.
Exactly. Big CBS star.
Right, yeah.
And he's hosted the Grammys. He's hosted Grammys for years. So we had LL Cool J. And so we put him with Carol Channing. What two people would you want to see more than LL Cool J and Carol Channing?
Brilliant.
And so I thought, well, this will be funny. I'll give Carol a rap to do with LL Cool J. So we wrote her a rap, and I told him, LL, and he thought it was a very funny idea. And she thought, oh, I think that's hysterical. And then we got there, and of course she said, well, you know, I haven't learned yet.
Oh, no.
It's in the prompter, isn't it?
Oh, and I said,
yes. Well, I can't read the prompter without my – I won't wear my glasses. And she put on these glasses, and she had these gangster glasses.
Right, yeah.
Huge square frames with, like, a tint in them.
Yeah.
And she was wearing what could pass for bling. And LL said, well, just go out. You look great. Just go out. You look like you're in my posse. And so the two of them went out there, and they did it together, and it was very funny. I mean, she really did it great. It was a huge thing. Hugh Jackman was the host that year.
Yeah.
And there was a commercial after the award, and then Hugh came out, and he said, this just in, Carol Channing has been arrested in a drive-by shooting.
You gotta love that.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And you were actually, do you like, because I know music is you've written lyrics, and do you, in fact, write music as well?
I write lyrics.
Okay.
I don't write music.
In fact, when Bette Midler, the second to the last Carson Tonight Show, you wrote that song.
Well, I wrote it with Mark Shaiman,
right?
Who's, you know, a composer, lyricist, who wrote Hairspray. And we've been a team for years with Bette.
You Made Me Watch You was the name of the song? Or is it
You Made Me Watch You. You Made Me Love You, turn it into You Made Me Watch You.
That's right. To be a part of, and you've been a part of a number of pivotal, that's always references one of the
great
just
TV
landmark
moments.
TV moments.
Yeah, it is. She won an Emmy for that, actually. She won. And A lot of people don't remember is that was the last, like the next to the last Carson show on Friday. And on Monday, Jay Leno took over the show and Billy Crystal was the guest. And Mark and Billy wrote a parody of that.
Yeah.
Right. Of the parody of the parody.
I remember you made me watch you. I didn't want to do it. My agent really blew it.
Right.
It was hilarious. I remember that vividly. And you wrote that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Co-wrote it.
Does it amaze you when you think about the way things have changed with the when something would happen like that, like that moment or the Polanski moment at the Oscars or things that you were directly involved with, the vast numbers of people watching at once. We'll never have a time like that.
Well, that's part of the thrill of writing the Oscars. It's like playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, if you're going to play football, you want to be in the Super Bowl. And the Oscars is the Super Bowl of that kind of stuff. And it's live. And the bizarre thing about that show is people who don't go to the movies watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, people who don't watch television watch it. I mean, you have an audience, a large percentage of whom have no idea what you're talking about. when you say, when you're referencing the movies of the year, you say, Mahershala Ali, they have no idea who you're talking about.
Right, right.
And so that's the challenge, is to keep them entertained, mm-hmm. along with the people in the theater who are, of course, so nervous. You know, I mean, as I've said before, what people forget is that there are five nominees in each category, and one person wins, and four of them don't.
Yeah.
So, and as the evening progresses, the room fills up with losers.
It's true.
And they're bitter. They're bitter, and they're not paying attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you'll do a great joke, and they're sitting there, and they're wondering, I got to fire that guy. I would have won if this guy didn't come through for me. I'm gonna call. Now they can do it. They can sit there, and they can text people.
On their
phone.
They
can fire them as they're sitting there on national television. Texting away. Yeah. So it's become...
That's an interesting dynamic,
So what that means is that you're not going to get the full attention of the crowd.
Sure, sure.
If you're just jumping in, it's Bruce Valanche is our guest in the studio. And Nick, you had a question.
Yeah, Bruce, are you not on social media? And if so, why not?
I'm on Facebook.
Okay, yeah.
I twat not.
Yeah.
You don't twat?
I don't twat. Yeah. I don't twat. I don't Instagram. I don't take pictures. I don't do... No, I'm not that big a narcissist. It was a thrill to me to discover that after all these years. But if I really was a narcissist, I probably wouldn't look like this.
It's just interesting.
It's an interesting point, though, yeah.
A comedian who is avoiding social media on a lot of levels, and it's I admire it a little bit.
I find it just, people get into trouble on it, and I don't want to pick fights with strangers. I have family for that.
Yeah.
And this is, coming up Thanksgiving, the family fight holiday of the year, where everybody gets to be mad at everybody else and blame it on the tryptophan.
Yeah, no, it gets amped up exponentially. But let me ask you, with the cast that's involved in this production that people will see, is this the cast that will port over to Broadway?
Well, hopefully, if we go to Broadway after
right.
This is like a pilot production we're going to see. It might get a little bit bigger for Broadway.
How hard is that process at any given time? I know we talk about like TV pilots and so on and so forth.
Mm.
Now you have a pedigree attached to your name, and that's something. Is it likely you'll end up on Broadway?
It depends on the producer.
Okay,
he's an independent producer from Chicago, and this production is the Delaware Theater Company production.
Right.
So we will see what happens with it. We did a lab production up in Connecticut at Goodspeed, which is a theater lab that does a lot of new musicals, and we'll see what happens. I mean, when Delaware, we did a workshop in New York, and Delaware expressed an interest in doing the show, and I thought, well, fabulous.
Yeah.
And Sheryl Crow had done a musical there. She did a musical of Diner, the old Barry Levinson
Love
movie.
That
Barry
movie. Levinson. Yeah.
And I called Sheryl, and she said, oh, do it. They're great. It's a fabulous theater. The audiences are wonderful in Wilmington, and you'll learn a lot about your show doing it.
That's very cool.
Now, Diner hasn't gone on yet. It will.
Yeah.
It will, and hopefully so will we. But it's great that there's an audience in Wilmington, and as I drove up here from Wilmington, so I got to see everything from chicken farms to convents to everything.
Yes.
I mean, we took a very exotic route.
Sure.
Through the back hills. There was a banjo player in a tree looking at me lovingly, and so the audience from this part of the woods is obviously really special, and they they show up. They come to the theater.
That's awesome.
So I'm looking forward
so
to
this,
it.
So this show takes place in around 1965.
Yeah.
I took an Uber the other night, and the guy that was driving, we started talking, and we were just talking, he was talking about his past, and he was drafted in the Vietnam War, and I know that this is part of this, or at least it was in that era.
Yeah.
So you were around, you're turning,
yeah.
No big secret, you're turning 70 in a few days. Yeah. were you ever, thinking, huh, I could be sent off if they called my
name? Always. I was drafted. There was a lottery, and my number was 151, and they got to it, and we had to go down and take the physical and do all of that, and then, you know, we weren't called up. I mean, but I did what was called checking the box. There was a box of questions, and it said, are you a practicing homosexual?
Yeah.
And I wrote it, and I think, no, I've got it down. But the shrink said, well, this is funny. Is it a joke? And I said, no, it's real. And then you know, they have to ask you all these really ridiculous questions.
Right.
That you had to prove that you knew about what gay sex was like.
Oh, mm-hmm. In case you were trying to phone it in.
Exactly, for, right. And this was where they would, like, eliminate the straight guys who were pretending.
Oh, I would love to hear that text.
We can't do it on this show.
No, but I'm going to look that up.
May be my next musical.
That's got to be. I think that would be amazing. You know, it's like when you talk of a time when I think there's a documentary, I think it's called Atomic Cafe, and it's of that time when students were instructed to get under their desk during a nuclear war because that would protect them.
Duck and cover.
Yeah, duck and cover, exactly. So these things, though, but that's fascinating.
Do you cover some of this archaic material a little bit in the show?
Well, Vietnam certainly factors into it. One of our characters winds up going to Vietnam, but it is absolutely a part of it.
Okay.
And she, our lead character comes to New York and all of becomes a part of all of this, becomes a part of the protest movement. And
there's a general fascination with that time, and like Mad Men captured it. It's just because there's so many things happening at once. There was this massive confluence of things taking place, and yet pop culture was exploding as well. And it's a cool time.
It is great. Yeah. And the music, this particular music, Petula stuff and the stuff that we've chosen, everything had to be from 65 and 66.
Right.
Her music in particular was really theatrical. I mean, that was after the British invasion, the Beatles and the Stones and all that, and before psychedelia came in.
Yeah.
There was a period where every pop thing was done in a studio with a full orchestra.
Right.
And you hear all these huge arrangements, and they're the same kind of arrangements you would hear on Broadway.
There was a Phil Spector-ish
exactly
big
right.
Wall
yeah,
of
the
sound.
Wall of Sound. That was the LA thing. And then in New York and in London, it was, you know, 30 people, lots of horns.
Yeah.
You know, it was pre-synthesizer and all that, so everything was real. Mm-hmm. And that's what the music is like in the show.
That's cool. That's cool.
So that's the 28th at the Delaware Theater Company. And your show in Peddler's Village at the Cock and Bull, when is that?
That is Saturday night.
This Saturday. Night. And is this just conversations of this, Bruce Valanche?
Like this, but more. I can do the entire draft story.
That alone
is worth the price of admission.
Yeah,
but a lot of show business stuff and just fun.
That's cool, man. And does that show, do you take that to different cities?
Yeah, I do it all over the place. When I feel like it, you know. And I do a lot of corporate gigs, which I love.
Really?
Because
they pay well.
They pay very well. You don't have to do any press, which I'm enjoying this.
No, but
I mean, you don't have to sell yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have to sell any tickets. They're there.
Yeah.
They have to be there. And I tend to be like the diversity entertainer, you know, like for the
right.
And they're always very
to
hip.
Show their forward thinking.
It's funny because I mean I hear all about Silicon Valley and how tech is just so is so insensitive and all that, but I mean they're the tech companies are the first ones that reached out to me to come and perform because they wanted unusual people who
where have you played?
They had me. I've done.
Have you done Google and Apple?
Google, Apple, and Hewlett Packard a lot. And,
what's the Google? Were you on the actual Google facility?
I was at the campus. Yes,
sort of nirvana for an office situation.
It is, except there's a lot of glass, and I was walking around saying, "Man, if there's an explosion, we are Julian."
that's big glass, sliced and diced.
The pit ham will be sliced and diced.
In fact, they were talking about it. There was a story about the people at the facility were walking into the walls constantly because they couldn't. They couldn't discern where the windows were.
You know, I was. This is apropos of nothing, but I was in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
and there is a street where every building, it's new, all glass towers, and it is all built with feng shui. So they right. all face a certain way for the spirits and all that kind of stuff. What it also means is there's a certain time of day when the sun hits the glass on every building and it blinds everybody. And so they put up barricades. You cannot drive down that street
really?
Because they were crashing into each other.
Oh, my God.
Because the sun, it created a critical mass of light.
That is a great, I love that I they did that.
And I said, so yeah. where were the feng shui masters
yeah!
that day?
Right.
When this plan was unleashed. Excuse me so much.
That's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
That is wild.
It's really great to meet you, Bruce. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming by
you
here
too.
This morning. We appreciate it.
I'm glad I did it.
Excellent. Bruce Flanch, everyone.
Yeah!
Yay! WMMR's live stream. Our daily programming available anytime, anywhere, on your desktop, tablet, smartphone, or open the new MMR skill with Alexa. Great sound quality and the occasional bonus song. Nice.
Apparently, there's a new trend. I saw this online, a story that popped up, and I was curious as to those who have participated in this. It's called drunk shopping.
Drunk shopping.
Yes, apparently that's a thing.
And we're not talking about going to the convenience store for jerky. We're talking about, like, going around retail, going around, like, the mall, right?
Yeah, well, there's a new study by Finder.com that shows nearly half of American adults have admitted to making purchases while under the influence. I don't know how much of this is online purchasing, because that,
well, that
is a whole other level.
Well, you know what? Actually, that makes more sense. You yeah. don't want to be driving around while you're lit up.
But you can be at a, you know, say if you're a King of Prussia Mall
yeah.
and you go by the brewery, the microbrewery or a restaurant and have a couple cocktails and you're in the mall.
Yeah.
Let's go buy something.
Yeah. I did it two Christmases ago.
Okay.
I went drunk shopping, and I was at the store. I was at Target, and I was, you know, I had gotten everything I needed, but there was apparently that day I needed to get more, and I ended up buying a Ninja Turtle bike that was, like, way too big for Jace. It sat in the garage for, like, 2 years, and, like, he just fits it now.
Wow. Okay. Well, you were just planning ahead.
But I was like, oh, my God, he loves it at the time.
He's going to love this in 2 years.
He's going to love this. I have to get it. What if they don't have it next year?
Marissa?
Yeah, Kathy, I picked it up.
It must be Target, because they just opened one at 19th and Chestnut, which is great, except when you go to happy hour with your friends and you have to walk past Target on the way home, and it's like, oh, let me just, like, go in and buy some grapes and some yogurt, and then you, like, end up in the home goods section, and it's like, yes, I
when
need
to redoing your bathroom.
Yeah, gold-plated stapler, yes. And then there's, like, boutiques next door, and you just keep walking and walking, and you end up with, like, 8 bags of clothes.
I wonder if they do anything to sort of border collie you in there, knowing that people are going to quite possibly walk past a little drunk.
I don't know.
And play off that. I would.
But apparently Americans have spent an estimated $30.43 billion on these spontaneous drunk purchases.
Well, you almost made one, Preston.
Well, that was a bid.
eBay, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bid.
What
that was
did you
that
bid
was
again?
Drunk bidding. It was a book from
Not almost.
No, I did bid.
You did bid.
I just didn't win it.
Oh. Thank God.
I bid $1,000
on a book.
Mm-hmm. On a book.
On a paperback book?
No, not a paperback book.
It was,
yeah, but it was Mad Libs.
No, it was a
used Mad Libs book.
It was a book from when I was a kid by an author called Pierre Probst, and it was very dear to me, and the version that I had of it is pretty beat up. I ended up getting it rebound which cost me several hundred dollars, to be honest. But
not $1,000.
I tried to buy one that was in good condition on eBay for $1,000. I was lit up that night.
I remember.
I mean, I wasn't just buzzed. I was pretty hammered.
I think we were talking to you while you were in the process. I think we had a conference call. In fact, I'm willing to
really?
Bet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get this book on eBay.
Yeah, it was The Golden Treasury of Caroline and Her Friends.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we've all, most of us have been drunk on the conference call before.
Sure. Sometime or another.
Yeah.
The difference is, though, you're right, though, with one-click shopping on Amazon, and now Walmart has really reinforced their online shopping program.
I was drunk on Sunday when we did it.
Were you?
Sure, yeah.
Did you buy anything online afterwards?
No, I didn't shop.
How do you like this bra?
Yep.
I can easily see the online shopping, though. That's easy, but actually getting yourself to the store and being in the store, that's probably
it's a double-edged sword, though, because you got to... In the proper scenario, you show up sober because you're with other people, perhaps, and they're driving you. That's fine. I think, I almost think it's more enticing if you're walking, you see it, and you physically, I got to have this.
This has been apparently within the past year or so, it's really increased. So it says Americans have spent an estimated $30.43 billion on these spontaneous drunk purchases, or about $447 per person. You compare this to last year, and people had only spent an average of $206 on drunk purchases. So it's more than doubled.
Well, let me
as far as people, yeah, getting buzzed and that, and buying stuff.
As a business model, then, why don't we have, like, first off, what tends to sell more during drunk purchases, do they say?
No.
Okay, but if you could find out what that was and then have a store with a liquor license.
Yeah.
And a like a bar in the middle, you could clean up.
Let me go to a couple of calls here. I'm going to go to Julie. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. Very good. So have you bought something while drunk?
Yes. I was on eBay while I went to happy hour afterwards, and I woke up to a winning bid of a piece of the parachute from Apollo 13.
A piece of the parachute from Apollo 13. Were you prior to that a ravenous NASA fan?
I am, yeah. I love the NASA program. But so when I purchased it, I put my max bid of like $200 thinking, someone's going to outbid me for it. And I won, and it came in the mail, and it's probably the size of my thumbnail.
Oh, my God. Of course. And were they able to authenticate it, or are you sus? Okay,
yeah,
they did.
There is something, but I still don't really believe that, you know.
Now, was it framed or anything like that? Or?
It's in like an encased thing. So it is pretty cool, but the entire thing is probably the size of an index card.
Chris, it's just like a little piece of fabric at the bottom of a box.
Right.
There you go.
Oh, man. $200. All right. Thanks, Julie. I appreciate it. Yep. All right. Let me go next to Sean. Hey, Sean. Good morning.
Hey, Jersey Black Rocks.
Jersey Black Rocks. One of my favorites.
Jersey Black Rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What's up, Sean?
I'll tell my wife, like, yeah, I got to go to the army. And then I'll stop off and I'll have a couple pops, a couple shots of whiskey.
Yeah.
And I go in there knowing what I'm going to do. So I'm like, all right, let me just get the small basket so I don't overload this. And before you know it, I'm just getting Jack's cheese curls, lunch meat, French bread pizzas, just like all this stuff. Like,
so,
I have to smoke like a pound of hash or something.
Yeah.
With all this crap. And I didn't get any of the staples, nothing I needed.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was younger, I was a sucker for coming home from the bars and watching those, like, 3 a.m. infomercials. And I'd be like, oh, my God, yeah, of course. I could use a waffle maker. Yeah. I bought ab lounges, like those electronic slides.
Sean, let me ask you, did you ever buy a Showtime rotisserie grill?
Yeah.
There you go.
I would buy just all that. And I get 2 days later. I'm like, oh, my God. It would just sit in my I'd have the yard sale in the spring to sell all the junk.
Would you would you buy it one flat out payment, or would you do the flex pay?
Oh, no, a flat-out payment. I'm drunk, and I got all the money in the world.
Why not? Just keep going. Yeah, you're the kind of customer they look for. You notice they never put drunk people on, though, when they're talking.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those people in Bangladesh that I'm talking to are probably just tapping their ass off. Like, look, we got another one on the hook.
This is a sports rotisserie grill this month.
I love it. Yeah, thanks, man. Sean. Appreciate it, man. Case, you were asking if this I think you were the one who asked if this included food shopping.
Yeah.
With this, so I guess Sean would be a perfect example of that. Listen, you don't go to the grocery store. I learned it early on. Don't go to the grocery store hungry.
So that's the closest for me of being drunk. So if I go the worst is to go to BJ's or Costco when you're hungry.
Yes.
Because you'll buy a 50-gallon drum of pretzels.
Well, and get high and go food shopping.
Well, that was our standard, yeah. You know, in college. Like, let's go to Redner's. You come home with a bag of... I mean, a bag, not like a Snickers bar, but a bag of Snickers bars. That guy said French bread pizza. That was a staple. Pickles.
Yes. The giant plastic tub of the cheese balls.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the really big one?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's, you had to have that.
So BJ's has the bakery area right by checkout. So those... You know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
those, they're chocolate chip cookies. I'm like, you red. The ones that are half dipped in chocolate.
Ooh. Are you guys impulse buy people? Do you buy stuff in the aisle?
I will all the time. Yeah.
And not necessarily candy.
The checkout aisle?
Yeah. Like tchotchkes, stuff I don't need.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Not all the time.
Preston,
but
I have like five or six little mini flashlights.
Yeah, stuff like that.
I need this. Oh,
I'm a sucker.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for the impulse buy.
Yeah, I am as well. The worst for me is Home Goods because they have it set up where you actually weave through, like, basically another aisle. Uh-huh. And, I mean, all of the women there.
Yes.
You're stopping and you're looking. I will absolutely...
Kitchen gadgets, really great things.
And then Bed Bath & Beyond also. They have
Bed Bath & Beyond.
Right at the front, and that's where you get the mini flashlight or...
Two other places, Dick's Sporting Goods. Or, yeah, the one at Collegeville has that now, where you weave through...
An aisle.
And what was the other place? Home Goods has that.
Yeah,
Staples.
Risque Video.
Staples has that as well.
I have a mini screwdriver.
A mini screwdriver. Staples does the same thing as well.
Mm-hmm. And before there was online shopping, you also had, I remember a comedian one time doing a bit on infomercials. Like his wife, and the next morning was like, your blue blocker sunglasses arrived. What are you talking about?
Blue blocker sunglasses. These things are incredible. I feel like I'm seeing the world in HD.
Speaking of infomercials, let me go to Chris. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Man, I was watching an infomercial about 2 a.m., all drunk on Captain Morgan, couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, my brother calls me, says, yo, I got 6 boxes here at the house for you. I'm like, what are you talking about? Open them up. He goes, dude, you got 5 machetes and like 6 samurais.
Machetes.
I wind up checking my account. I'm missing like $400, and I finally figured out it was the knives.
Oh my! You ended up buying machetes while drunk. That's great.
Drunk, don't remember it.
Yeah.
The phone call. I'm missing money trying to figure out where it's at.
Chris, did you have some? I mean, I've never been to the Renaissance Fair, but that's similar, right? You always came back with swords.
Swords. We got them in the office. They're all displayed.
I've got one here, but I have more at home. I eventually gave some away because I'm like, what am I doing?
What am I doing with these?
Why do I have these? I almost bought. They had the entire array of the Lord of the Rings swords. I mean, I'm talking the orc swords, the Narsil. They had every single variety of sword.
You were talking about this.
You could get, and I'm like... I can do that. I can do that. And I would build a wall, you know, where I would...
I shall build a wall.
Yes.
Oh, and on that wall, I shall place my swords. This is at the Renaissance Fair. Is this the thing that's actually in the ship? It's like
inside
the ship.
Yeah, they had the full display of these swords.
I shall build a wall in Harleysville.
They were mounted on the wall. They looked amazing. And I didn't want just one. I wanted all of them. Because they had, you know... They had everything. Lagalos, his sword, even though he's a bow guy, they had one for him.
What if you had just another beer? Do you think maybe?
Rochelle was with me. It wasn't going to happen. There's no way she was going to let me get that. The 2 or 3 I came back with were too many as it was.
Do all of our children need to go to college?
Yes, exactly. Let me see. What is this? I'm going to go to, let me go to James. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hey, sorry about you guys at work.
It's okay. All right. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, so seeing out like drinking and buying stuff online, my girlfriend, she does babysitting part time, and a couple months ago she left me and our 2 girls home, my 2 dogs, and we were all drinking, and I said my boss has been riding me for the last 6 years, so I haven't taken a vacation, so I kind of just got drunk and bought a ticket to Germany.
Let me take this story back. You and your dogs are drinking?
Well. They were kind of like supervising me.
Okay. They were watching.
And you bought a ticket to Germany.
Yeah. Basically.
When are you going?
I'm going May 17th. I'm coming back the 28th.
All by yourself?
Yeah, all by myself. And like the craziest thing was like.
Oh my God.
Wait, so is your wife or girlfriend going with you? No?
No, I'm flying solo.
Oh, my God, he's going.
I am assuming ticket was non-refundable, correct?
Yeah, it's non-refundable, but, you know, I gave my boss a notice, and he gave me the go-ahead. So.
Okay. All right, and then now have you gone ahead and made, plans of where you're going to stay and stuff like that yet, or is it just, I'm flying to Germany?
Yeah. Like, the weird thing was, like, I'm starting to, like, I was trying to, like, process the whole, you know, fact I'm flying halfway across the world. And I'm like, man, where am I going to stay at, you know?
If I may suggest get drunk and then go online and plan your itinerary.
Might
as well make it a whole thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's exactly what I did. I downloaded Airbnb, and I started texting these, like, these hosts in German. And they're like, oh, yeah, come by. Like, we can't wait to see you. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll see you guys in, like, a couple months.
Okay.
So, I mean, pretty much drinking and doing things has been working out pretty well in 2018, so.
Yeah, you may have to thank your drunk self later on after you have the trip of a lifetime to Germany, right? Man.
Yeah, right.
All right, enjoy.
Get back to work.
Yeah, all right, man. See you, man. Marissa's been doing some drunk airline purchasing.
Is that right?
As of late. I think she, this was last night, maybe, or...
Yeah, just over the weekend, I bought a trip to Vegas.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when are you going?
Oh, during our vacation in the spring. Yeah, just for a few days.
You alone, or do you have friends out there, or are you going with other people?
My friend happens to be out there for a conference, so I'm crashing with her. And, okay. Yeah.
All right, nice.
Yeah, and that's how it starts, too. It's like, we're out drinking.
Yes.
You talk about it.
We should do it. We should do it. We should do it.
Keep going when you get home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's how it works.
I've got one friend. She's got four kids, and my other friend has two kids. And we were all discussing, we're turning 40. We're going to go away. We're going to do a friendship. Yes, we're going to do it. And then we're on a text chain like a week later, and everyone's like, well, he has softball. She has softball. He's got baseball. We've got basketball. I can't go that weekend. And it's like, okay, forget it.
Oh, we all booked a trip to Pitcairn Island. That's where the bounty sunk.
Yeah, so drunk shopping is picking up quite a bit within the past couple of years. I'm going to go to Melanie. Hey, Melanie, good morning.
Good morning.
What's up, Melanie? What's your story?
Well, my husband purchased himself an $80,000 vehicle.
while he was lit up?
No, hold on. It gets better.
Okay.
So it's obviously a sports car.
Yeah.
So the roads were a little slippery, and he kind of crashed. So he came home that weekend. He was really bumming. He loves this car. So I wouldn't say he was drunk, but he said to me, honey, I think I had a little bit too much to drink today. And I said, okay. I bought another $80,000 car.
Oh my God.
The same exact car that he crashed.
Well, let me ask you something. So we assume he had insurance on the first car, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so he you could roll that over to the purchase of the second car, because it sounds the first car was totaled.
Well, it wasn't totaled. So now he has two of those vehicles. Well, the chopper is also. He does auto body repair.
Oh, well, that helps.
Yeah, a little bit.
Did he learn his lesson about driving while lit up?
Well, no. He wasn't lit up driving. The roads were just a little
split. Oh, okay.
And he drove, like, over the painted yellow lines.
I see.
But when he bought the second car,
I gotcha. All right.
So he bought the exact same car. Same car, same year, same model, same color?
Everything.
Oh, my God.
What kind of car is it?
A V28 Camaro.
All right. Okay. So quick question. Did you want to beat the piss out of him?
No, because the following year, I bought myself one.
She, like, all whispered right. it.
All right. Thank
do
you
ever do you savor that if Rochelle gets her something? Do you like, okay, now I have a little,
I have to get
have a little credit now?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's my turn for a toy now, you know? Let me go.
Oh, there's a new Batman statue out.
I'm going to go to Nicole here. Hi, Nicole. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Nicole. All right. What'd you buy when you were drunk?
So I was going on an international flight, and my flight was delayed. So I had a couple Long Island iced teas in the airport and wound up spending almost all of my vacation money on the duty-free crap that you can buy there, like perfumes and scarves and purses. And then when I got on the plane, I bought more of the stuff that they sell on the plane, on their little carts. And
the Sky Mall.
Oh, it was terrible.
Well, let me ask you.
I had no money for my vacation. I spent it all before I even got off the plane.
I've seen people do that. And, you know, people don't travel a lot. What is that?
You can't exchange anything because you're in another country.
Yep.
That's the duty-free shop. Well, what does that mean? They don't charge you tax. Oh, my God!
I know. Yeah. Sometimes you buy just because because you're told it's a better deal. Now, sometimes it really is. Sometimes it depends on what country you're in, and liquor will be much cheaper.
Right.
Or sometimes it's way more expensive.
But you have to know. That's the thing. Yeah. You have to drink that alcohol and know that that is a deal that you're getting.
Dude, yeah. I bought it. I was 17. And I bought it going to Cancun for senior week. So I didn't really even know what I was buying.
You just bought booze?
When we took the trip last year, we were flying over to Denmark. And these 20-somethings were, I mean, they bought so many bottles of liquor at the duty-free shop. Like huge ones, because they sell really large ones too. And they were just loaded.
You got to carry that crap around.
You have to carry that crap around. But sometimes it's a bargain. Other times it's not quite so. Interesting, but I thought that stat was kind of wild. Finder.com shows nearly half of American adults have admitted to making purchases while under the influence, and they spent about $447 per person last year compared to the following year, $206 on drunk purchases.
Quick question. Do you think you're more inclined to shop extravagantly under the influence of booze or pot?
Oh, booze, no question.
Right? Booze would seem to be the culprit.
Because it lowers your inhibitions.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to say, F it.
Yeah. Except for judgment first.
Life is short.
Yeah, except for food.
Except for food.
Yeah.
Food's a different story.
Yeah, especially if you're at the buffet.
Yeah. And if you're drinking, you want more to drink.
Yes.
So, you know, that doesn't count as food, I don't think. Anyhow, interesting. Thanks for your phone calls.
WMMR presents Disturbed. Tonight at the Big Joint. Three Days Grace opens the show for David Draiman and Disturbed. Brent Porch is your cordial host, and Jackie Bam Bam broadcasts live with complete concert coverage from inside the venue. Get ready, Disturbed, and 3 Days Grace will rock the roof off the place. Some tickets remain at WellsFargoCenterPhilly.com. Presented by 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
There was an article that came out a little while back I found kind of interesting, and it was stating that more than one-third of paramedics have reported being assaulted while on the job during the 12 months.
Oh, that sucks.
One-third.
It's not like the job is tough enough. You're getting assaulted.
And this was done, by the way, this is done internationally, so it's not just in the U.S. It's all over the world. Medical officers have called for better training and cooperation with police and improved education as a way to prevent future assaults. And the first international study looking at paramedic assaults. The study surveyed about 1,778 paramedics from 13 different countries. Of them, 633 reported being assaulted in the past year, and 203 of those said the incident could have been prevented.
Friend of mine years ago, paramedic. All the time. Getting into fights and scuffles, you know, at the scene where he's responding.
Yeah, you're just
to take
trying
care
to help.
Of someone.
Exactly.
And somebody there, a relative or somebody.
Well, it's funny, you hear about people that are overdosing on heroin, and then they get the Narcan, and then they come to and they get pissed off. It's like, dude, you're
start
about
swinging.
To die.
Yeah.
You're about to die. But intern Joe, he's a paramedic now, or an EMT. I don't know if there's a difference between...
Yes, there's a difference.
Okay.
Yes, there's a big difference.
Big difference?
A paramedic can prescribe medications, I believe. So, or not prescribe, but... Now, I'm
can make them in his basement.
You'd better call now, because otherwise here we're going to muck it up left and right.
Please call us.
But yes, there's a difference.
There is a big difference. I understand that.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the difference is.
One of them can use a parachute, and the other one cannot.
They're saying that. And listen, sometimes it happens that you just have a confused person, somebody who's been injured is...
they don't know.
Yeah, they can be...
flailing.
Yeah, exactly. So it happens. So self-defense equipment and resources were mentioned as a potential solution by multiple respondents in the survey, such as restraints for violent patients, as well as ketamine for those who do not respond to drugs such as Valium.
We talk about police showing up at the scene. Something's happened. You don't know what's going on. You have these men and women showing up and... You know, the situation's already gone south. There's somebody in a dire situation.
Yeah.
And then while you're trying to take care of that person, or maybe even that person themselves, you start to get in, you're getting attacked.
Do you guys see 1517 to Paris yet, that Clint Eastwood movie?
I have not. I want to see it, though.
All right, so there are these scenes, Steve, and they used the real men who were involved in the terrorist attack on the train.
Right.
And they talk about the training that these guys go through. One guy goes through Air Force paramedic training. And this is just the training exercises. And I found myself getting tense at the stuff that he was supposed to memorize, where, like, there's a clear fluid coming out of a victim's brain or a victim's ears because there's been a brain injury. And the ability to discern what's happening while something tragic and awful is happening at the same time and then react properly.
I would collapse.
It takes an ability that is foreign to me.
The greatest service I've done to humanity is not become a paramedic or an EMT.
I mean, you know
how to save more lives by knowing I'm stupid.
You could do a trach. Right?
Yeah, the tracheotomy is my specialty.
With a pen?
If you need that, with the big pen.
I'm going to go to Tony. Hi. Tony, good morning.
I like turtles.
Yes.
Nice. Tony, you are an EMT?
Yes, and I actually work where you live there, Preston.
Oh, excellent.
In your house.
In your basement. He's inside the house.
Lower Salford, I assume?
In the Harleysville area, yes,
okay.
Sir.
All right, cool. So what's up? What's the difference here between EMTs and paramedics?
So EMT is what we call basic. We can do basic life safety. We can stop bleeding, stuff like that. Paramedic is where we give out medications for various things, nausea, heart medicine. When you're overdosing, we can do that. Seizures, we can give seizure, to reverse the seizures and stuff like that.
So so when a call goes in, I mean, obviously questions are asked, and then at that point they know whether to send EMT workers or paramedics, correct?
Most of the squads, the ambulances in the area, especially in Montgomery County, are what we call our ALS trucks. They're paramedic and EMT. It doesn't matter what call you're going on. There's always a medic and there's always an EMT.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then we switch off depending on what we find on the scene. Like, some calls are dispatch, just BLS, just basic. You got toe pain, guess what? The EMT is riding that in. Other ones, you're having chest pain, a heart attack, guess what? The medics are riding that in because they can give the medications and give with the monitor, they can do cardioversion.
Hey, Tony.
With that. Yeah.
Have you ever been attacked? Have you ever been you have. How often do you get into a physical altercation while you're responding?
Nowadays, not so much. I used to work for a psychiatric truck out of the state hospital, and that was a constant occurrence. Literally one of those daily things where you knew you're going in, and at one point in your shift, you're getting punched, kicked, bit, whatever. Nowadays, for me, it's not so much.
Have you ever had a situation where it's like, oh my God, this just got super real?
Had a few of the barricaded subjects. Not necessarily in the Harleysville area, but when they come out, they usually come out. If they're not taken by police, they are coming out swinging. They are very upset, and you end up getting in the line of fire there with punches, kicks, anything.
All right. How many times have you been called to Preston's house because of a hot tub issue?
Look, I promise you I want to tell.
Don't answer that question, Tony.
Don't answer
Thanks,
that
man.
Question.
Appreciate it, by the way.
We have a man with very pruned fingers.
Hey, okay, so this is a little bit off topic, but we can go back to this in a second. But speaking of emergency crews and so forth, I went by Wawa and Skipback on Sunday morning, and there was a large group of large men in the parking lot, and they were all wearing black T-shirts. I mean, a lot of guys.
Okay.
And it looked like the steroid convention. These guys were freaking huge.
Really?
And they were wearing shirts that said CERT, C-E-R-T. So I went and looked that up. It's emergency response team of some sort.
Oh, I'm glad they're huge, the emergency response team guys.
I'm here with the emergency response.
They look like the biggest group of large, unhappy men that I've ever seen in my life. They just look pissed off.
That's the way I want them.
I don't know about that. I was like not comfortable being around them.
I just have a little bit of a smile.
I'm like, wow, you guys really hate what you do.
What did you on the radio?
What did you find out they were?
CERT. It's a government funded.
It's a mouth mint.
Emergency response team.
Computer emergency response
team? No, not commute, not computer emergency
actually,
response.
That's what Wiki says. Modem clearly has a problem with your hookup. I suggest you replace your Ethernet cable.
Yes, I do steroids.
Here you go. The Community Emergency Response Team. I assume that's them.
That's probably it.
Yeah, it says...
What's going on over there in Hollywood?
I don't know, man. They were all over. They were crawling all over the place.
People have suggested something right here on text.
Oh, Teams is for the Greaterford prisoner transfer.
Yeah, I'd be pissed off too.
So they have built. You guys know I live right by Greaterford Prison.
Yes.
So they built
the schools.
They built a course. They built a whole new facility there.
All right.
An entirely new prison. And my wife was actually telling me. She said, "Yeah, I think this weekend they're transferring all the prisoners over."
So that's probably what it was.
That's what it was.
Well, you want those guys looking mean, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? In fact, one of the guys had a shirt that said DOC on the back of it. That's Department of Corrections. No wonder they didn't look happy.
Well, you can't listen.
Yep.
My brother was
they're
a corrections officer.
Yeah. Thousands of prisoners from one location
to
another.
You know how pissed off you get when you have to help a friend move?
Yeah, exactly.
How many times you've been asked to move a prison?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, how many? God. How about a few thousand?
This end table weighs 5,000 pounds!
Hang Listen, on. That has got to be a task that you can't even imagine.
I'm going to go to Tyler. Hey, Tyler, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, not too much. I just wanted to clear things up. Sounds like you guys already got it figured out, but I used to work for the Department of Corrections, and CERT is the Corrections Emergency Response Team.
Okay.
It's like our version of not quite as heavy as SWAT, but they're an emergency response team to quell riots and
got it.
Dear God.
I'm telling you,
that's a hell of a job.
Dude, it was a group of the biggest looking guys I've ever seen, and there had to have been.
Had to have been
at least 40 of them there, 35 or 40 of them there, and they were all congregating. Yeah.
Well, they were moving from SCI Greaterford to SCI Phoenix. That move required the attention of the specialty teams.
Yeah.
So I would imagine. Because of that, they were calling the teams from all different facilities to come down and facilitate the move from SCI Greaterford to SCI
Phoenix. Dear God. Tyler, the amount of work that must go into transferring a prison population to another prison must be extraordinary.
Did you say Phoenix?
Yeah. The new facility is called SCI Phoenix.
Is it in Phoenixville or is that just the name of it?
No, it's just the name of it. It's still on the same grounds as SCI Greaterford.
It's next door to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's right next door, yeah.
Yeah, so you know when you come in through Collegeville, you can see the lights of Greaterford up on the hill?
Yep.
There are brighter, whiter lights under that. That's SCI Phoenix.
Yeah, the other ones are kind of orangish yellow, and these new ones are bright white. And in fact, they finally, Tyler, had them all lit up this weekend. They had portions of them. I know it was beautiful.
Can you see the lights of Greaterford from the hot tub?
Not from the hot tub, from the front door, yes.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
So are there still inmates in the old building, or has everyone moved to the new building?
As far as I know, they put out a news release on their Facebook page last night that the final bus left Greaterford yesterday.
So, Tyler, as they're boxing up all the prisoners, what do they write on the outside of the box?
Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. You have a good one.
Man, and Greaterford, I mean, that's the big house.
That's it?
That's the real deal. It's a straight-up prison.
The new facility, the reason for the new facility was to provide a spa, correct?
Of course. Yeah, of course. No wonder, because I saw these guys. It was a beautiful morning.
Yeah.
They're all up, you know, ready to go to whatever their job is, whatever doing. And, like, not one of them looked like they were ready for the. They looked angry.
Well,
I'm like, wow.
Now you understand.
Oh, hell yeah. They had a serious job ahead of them. They had
Dear God.
They had to be as serious as they could be.
Or maybe they were getting into character. You know, maybe they weren't that pissed off. They just had to pretend like
they got to put on the face.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate that. Speaking of other dangerous jobs, we had mentioned that being an EMT or being a paramedic can put you in the way of assault on occasion. I did see this list of the 8 most dangerous jobs in the world.
8 most dangerous. You know, why am I perpetually fascinated by lists like this? Because it makes you appreciate, I think, the job you have.
There's a couple of surprising.
I had a paper cut about a month ago.
There's a couple of surprising ones in here.
CPA?
To be honest, no. But like private investigator is number 8 on here.
Of course.
They often do their own work with no backup. They catch people doing terrible or even illegal acts. And some of the dangers they face on a regular basis are demanding work schedules, violent people, getting into car accidents or extreme temperatures while they're, you know, casing a place.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're basically spying on somebody who doesn't want to be spied on, who is, you know, potentially breaking the law. I actually met somebody who was kind of casing somebody outside here in our parking lot.
Really?
Yeah, because we have doctor's offices and stuff like that. Ah. So it's not just...
Oh, I did too.
Yeah, yeah. But they're making sure that this person wasn't doing a... insurance fraud or something like that.
To see if they show up and put on like a neck brace and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Private investigators who do that, that could be risky as well.
Wait, were you talking about one of our former interns?
No.
Oh, never mind.
All right, so eight.
I want to hear this story.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you off
the air. All right.
Eight most dangerous jobs in the world. Ground maintenance workers.
Ground maintenance? You mean because of the equipment you're using?
I believe so. It says taking care of parks and outdoor areas may seem harmless, but according to this study, 217 total fatalities reported in 2016. Most of the deaths were due to falls, electrocutions, transportation accidents, or being struck by loose objects.
Not squirrels.
Whenever I see those Esplint working on the side of the road, and they've got all those wood chippers, and they're cutting down branches and stuff, I'm like, somebody's got to get hurt from time to time.
I've had a regular backyard wood chipper, regular size.
Yeah.
When there's something that, you know, two people side by side could jump through, no problem.
Yeah.
Those suckers are huge.
Yeah. Number six on this list are truck drivers. They have the highest number of deaths on the job in 2016, so the study's a couple years old, than any other occupation in the United States.
Truck drivers.
With a death rate of 24.7 per 100,000 workers. This is because they carry heavy and dangerous loads, drive when tired, and are driving so much that they are prone to being in a deadly accident.
I wonder how much the law is meant to stop them from driving. You know, there are specific rules to how long they can be driving and how much they have to rest. You know,
when you're a long-haul trucker, you can only log X amount of hours per day. Every now and again, when I'm looking at, or driving, and I'm surrounded by tractor trailers, I'm like, how are these things even legal? You know what I mean?
They're big, man.
They're so big.
No, you're right. Number five, no surprise, police officers.
Yes.
One of the most dangerous jobs around. Police, and I think this is in the world. Yeah, this is internationally. Police officers encounter the most dangerous criminals and situations and are murdered more than any other profession. So that one you would expect to be on this list. One you would not expect to be on this list. Number four, veterinarians.
Yeah. Because of animal attacks?
There's various types of veterinarians as well, not just, you know, your dog and cat.
Right.
There are ones
that
take care of big animals as well.
And polar bear veterinarian, I'm sure, has a more difficult deal.
Game preserves and things like that as well.
And they don't take the temperature by putting the thermometer under their tongue.
Vets are exposed to animal bites, infections, and illnesses, but mental health can also play a part. Huh. High stress, financial strain, and emotional hardships associated with euthanasia can be the leading cause of suicide.
Oh, so really? They on a daily basis see people with their beloved pets putting down their pets, and it starts to affect them.
Yeah, maybe not just seeing other people, but actually the animal, seeing the animal die before them as well, has got
to
be tough.
I mean, I had to do that this past year with my cat, and it was the first time I ever had to do that.
Yes.
And it was really, really, it was harder than I thought it was going to be.
It's incredibly difficult.
And even though the vet told me I was doing the right thing, it still didn't feel like I was doing the right thing.
I know.
You know?
You know how you help mitigate that a little bit? Make sure you always have 9 to 10 cats at home.
Yeah. that's all you got
to
do.
Yeah. But, you know, they're the ones who actually have to do that. You know, the cat was laying in my arms, but somebody else had to administer the drug.
No, it's heavy. It's a family member, and it will impact you.
In Australia, the Australian Veterinary Association, vets are up to 4 times more likely to commit suicide than the rest of the population.
I love this great white claw. They call him Binky. He's my favorite box jellyfish.
What kind of pets are they bringing?
The ringed octopus.
Yeah, the ringed octopus.
Yeah, that's
they call him Sucky because he's got little suckers on his tentacles.
Get all emotional when you do that.
Goodbye, buddy.
What about your saltwater crocodile?
The sound of you going. I can imagine Australian vet. Yeah, had to put it down. Had to put down my saltwater crocodile.
Did he have a name?
Chompers.
Chompers. Well, poor guy. So veterinarians. All right, here's another one. Roofers.
Yeah.
These are some of the most dangerous jobs.
Because
in the world.
They fall
yes.
off.
Yes, exactly.
It's an obvious Steve. One. Uh-huh. I wonder how many a roofer has encountered passing out from heat.
Well, yeah, and it
especially as we start to move into another string of 90 plus degree days, you know. And what? Correct me if I'm wrong. Did we not hear someone say that union rules? I guess it depends on whether union or not. There's a certain temperature. You cannot be up on a roof doing. It's illegal.
Yeah, I had a friend who was a union roofer, and right. I don't know if it was a certain temperature or what, but I mean, there was when it got to that ridiculous heat, they right. they wouldn't work.
Right.
They probably depends on the employer too. You know, yeah. like and how stringent they are when it comes to those rules. I had a job. I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but I did not last very long at this job. It was a maintenance company, and one of the jobs, it was in the winter. It was over a winter break from college. Was to take the snow off of roofs. So we would go to warehouses,
okay.
and like so long, big, flat roofs where the snow would weigh it down and become a hazard inside the building. The job was to take the snow, and it was. You'd think flat roof, snow, easy. It's just back-breaking stuff. It was really slippery and really difficult being up there.
Sure.
You know, a chance to fall. And,
so, yeah, fall off.
Yeah, I had a friend who had a fall from roofing. Yeah, and he was doing it as summertime work. And, he laid him in the hospital for, like, a couple of weeks.
Preston,
it was pretty nasty.
A friend in college was doing stuff like that. And he was bringing a sheet of plywood up. So he's going up the ladder. Held the plywood to the side as he's going up. Gust of wind turned that thing into a sail.
Oof.
And he got blown off like four stories up.
It's dangerous work. And number three on this list. Number two is a welder. It says welders, especially underwater welders, and we know an underwater welder, are very susceptible to injuries and accidents. Usually electricity and water don't mix, but it is part of the job for underwater welders. They face many dangers, including explosions and different pressure hazards.
I don't know why they don't get rid of that equipment and go completely with repulsor rays. I saw Iron Man doing it, and it seemed to be no problem.
Seemed really easy, right?
Yeah.
Is that in the second movie?
The third.
Third movie. Underwater welders die at a rate of 40 times higher than America's national average.
We did that cooling caravan with Dunkin' Donuts a few weeks ago and got a few emails from people, and it just wasn't geographically convenient, but from welders working in this heat without air conditioners, all they have is fans. I don't know how it's humanly possible to do that.
There you go.
Just use that.
So that's number two. And then the number one on this most dangerous jobs in the world, lumberjacks have the number one most dangerous job.
That's always up there.
Yeah. And you know what else is usually on a list like this? Although if it were just concentrated in America, but farmers have very, very dangerous jobs as well.
So the lumberjacks, we know that there's all sorts of sharp tools and trees falling on you, but is that basically the gist of it?
Yeah.
Or is it the embarrassment of having to wear all that flannel?
No, not that. They not only use dangerous machinery, but they climb trees and around falling heavy trees as well. In 2016, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that an average 135.9 out of 100,000 deaths. Most deaths are from falling trees or equipment errors.
Do you ever watch any of that show about the lumberjacks?
No. I've seen scenes, but I've never really watched the show.
They, like every episode, had something going wrong, you know?
Hang on. Jamie says working in mushroom houses are dangerous. Mushroom houses. Hi, Jamie. Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Preston?
Yeah, bud.
I knew it wasn't going to be on this list, of course, but my dad owns a mushroom business, and I've been working inside the mushroom house for the past 3 months, but I've been working for the company for the past 4 years, and every single day you hear people either falling 20 feet high. My dad actually was on workman's comp about 3 years ago because he fell, and they work with pitchforks, and he fell on top of the pitchfork.
So let me ask you something, Jamie. Are they walking on platforms above?
We're working on wood. It's literally just wood, and the wood boards. And the boards have been there for 20 years, 30 years. They barely get replaced, you know, or that's usually the case where people just, it's 20 feet high. If you saw footage, people working inside the mushroom house, you wouldn't believe it. The other day, the temperature said 110 degrees, and I literally had to stick my head outside so I can breathe because I couldn't breathe.
110 degrees with a bunch of stinky mushrooms.
Yeah.
But so the configuration has the workers above, 20 feet above them on wooden planks.
Yes.
Where are you? Where's
it's Kennett Square, actually.
Yeah. It is Kennett Square, the mushroom capital of the world.
Yeah.
Of course. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's
okay.
It doesn't sound good. Yeah.
Jamie, I always thought they did that like in caves and stuff like that.
No.
You're thinking of cave mushrooms.
No, I've seen them growing them in. Am I wrong about that?
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe. But here in Kennett Square, there's so many. Actually, there's a lot of competition. There's so many mushroom houses. You can go down every single road in Kennett Square, find a mushroom house. And I've been in mushroom work my whole entire life. My dad actually worked for a company, and then he became their mechanic and then got a loan, and he owns his own business now. So I've been working for him. But before that, I was working in a mushroom house also.
Okay. Just real quick, why Kennett Square? Is it the soil? Why is it so popular and abundant there?
It's perfect. The temperature. The hotness, coldness, everything, the temperature is just right. And Kennett Square, I don't know if it's just because someone started off with a mushroom business, but eventually it grew. And it's very hard to, it's just perfect. Everything's perfect here.
Maybe it already smelled like poop before they got here.
Yeah.
And let's then, grow
Preston, why not Rutledge?
I don't know. Why not Rutledge?
It's too small.
Is it? Yeah, it's only really, got nine really streets. Small. Yeah.
I know all the
Jamie.
Names.
Appreciate it, man. Okay.
I have a few friends of mine that are special education teachers, and they tell me that they can be attacked at any point, and it's a really, really dangerous job. You never know what you're going to get. And in fact, my one friend, she was smaller, and she would get her ass handed to her on a daily basis.
And how do you deal with that when it's a lot of times it's not the kid's fall.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You got to protect yourself, but not harm the person that you are supposed to be.
And that's all you can
after.
Really do is just you protect what, yourself.
The mushroom house is looking better.
Yeah. Right? Wow. Interesting. Listen, I appreciate we got to take a break. Let me go. I'm going to do one call because he's been on hold the longest. We have a private investigator who was the first thing I had on this list. Hi. Good morning. You're on the air.
I love you.
I love you. So you wanted to mention about your job being dangerous?
Yeah, I wanted to say that, wintertime is pretty easy because I've got a sleeping bag that it's for like negative 30 degree winters and stuff. So I use that in the wintertime. But in the summertime, man, it's not safe to leave your vehicle running the whole time with the AC going because that could really mess up your vehicle. But, you know, like on a hot day, like 90 degrees, 95, add about 50 degrees to that. And, you know, you're working in about 150 degree car.
Jeez. And you know what? Stakeouts must suck. And I know that's a lot of what you do, but just sitting and waiting I'm sure you're used to it by now, but, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely can get boring at times. When the things happen, they happen. And, you know, that's an opportunity to turn the AC on in the car, but... You know, there are days where you're just sitting in one spot for 8 hours, 10 hours at a time.
Let me ask you, give me percentages here. How much of your time is spent simply surveilling, and how much time is spent actually active in arresting someone or something else?
I don't actually arrest anyone. Yeah. I kind of just, I observe the activity. I take video of it. I take photographs, document it, and then I send it in.
So 100% is surveillance.
100% is surveillance, but if a person's not active, like if they're just in their house, like I'm not going to go into their living room and start filming them. Like if they're just in their house, it's just all you're doing is just sitting in your car. But it can get real hot, and there have been times where I've been in a hot car, like 150 degree car, and the person I'm surveilling is having like a pool party.
Oh man,
that sucks.
I would take my clothes off. I'd have all to right. sit there naked.
I've done it before. Yeah, I've been down to my underwear in this car.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Sure, man.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Well, there's a lot of strange jobs out there that do have dangers, and private investigator is one of them. I found that interesting. All right, anyhow, thanks for your calls. Appreciate it,
Preston and Steve. On 93.3 WMMR. Now, WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
We'll start with one that hits close to me. Police say a man stole golf balls from a private country club and resold them to a driving range.
What the f***?
But wait till you hear about how many he stole over time. Joseph Kalenda, who's 58, was arrested on a warrant last week and charged with second-degree larceny, a search warrant. Executed at his home in August, found in excess of 2,500 golf balls, many of them stamped with the Patterson Club logo.
Police began investigating in August after a club member found Patterson's golf balls while using the driving range at Great Brooks Sports. Now, officials told police there were three instances this summer where they discovered golf balls left for members to use were taken. The thefts happened, it ended up being a total of about 20,800 golf balls.
20,000 golf balls?
Yeah, that this guy stole.
Don't they pay people to go into, like, the ponds and stuff and get the golf balls out of those?
If you have a lot of water on the golf course, sometimes they will. But they also have, you know, a really nice club will have brand new, really good golf balls that they'll use for their driving range.
So he was
stealing
and reselling.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So a detective went to the facility and purchased a bucket of balls at the driving range. He found golf balls with the Patterson logo on there, and they talked to the manager, and they said that this guy sold them to him. So they busted him.
You have my balls.
Now he's been charged with a second-degree larceny for stealing golf balls. A Texas zoo was forced to close for the day after a wild mountain lion was spotted roaming around the park. A security guard discovered the stray feline inside the El Paso Zoo at approximately 6 a.m. Friday and alerted authorities. Officials were not able to find the mountain lion in the office hours. Have I presented this story before?
I don't think so.
Okay, all right. And the zoo remained closed as the search continued.
You did
continued.
One about golf balls.
Okay, I remember that one. The animal does not belong to the park, as the El Paso Zoo does not have a mountain lion exhibit.
So it was just a visiting the park.
Yeah. It's possible the big cat came
from zoos.
A desert area near the southwest Texas city. Let's see. A man has been arrested after a fire extinguisher inspection led to the alleged discovery of child porn.
Oh, man. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Employees at the Shadow Creek Apartments were collecting fire extinguishers for inspection on Friday. When they reached the suspect's apartment, they were inside. They found what appeared to be a slideshow of child pornography.
Are you kidding me?
On his computer in the living room. Police were called and went to the apartment. They confirmed the existence. Police say the suspect, James Drew Taylor, was located at his place of employment, and he allegedly told police that he did download the images from the internet. Now, tenants of this place were notified by three emails prior to the inspections that they should put their fire extinguishers outside for collection.
So, but listen, honestly, in this case, I'm always glad when the child pornographers are stupid. Dumb.
Yeah. Yep, precisely.
Anything that leads to them being captured is A-okay in my book.
Exactly. Apparently, a cute cat can be considered offensive to some. The U.S. Embassy in Canberra, Australia, has apologized on behalf of the Department of State, which accidentally sent out a test email featuring a photo of a cat dressed in a Cookie Monster costume.
So what's the big problem?
According to the Australian Associated Press, the photo was titled Cat Pajama Jam.
What's wrong with this?
And was sent with an email titled Meeting as part of a fake meeting invitation sent by the Department of State to recipients.
This is adorable.
I want to work for this government.
Yeah. The U.S. Embassy's apology reads in part, sorry to disappoint those of you who were hoping to attend the cat pajama party, but such an event falls well outside our area of expertise. It was a training error made by one of our new staff testing our email newsletter platform. So it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek apology.
All right.
But
I don't know who would be offended by this adorable little picture.
It is super cute. Look at that. What would you do for a bag of Doritos? That's the question. Well, the sheriff's department is
handy.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was part of the thing. You were just asking.
No.
Okay. I do like those.
Yeah.
Handies or Doritos?
Handy. Both. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a win-win for me.
What's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
We're negotiating here, Nick.
Oh, you mean give or get?
Well, I think it would be give. I thought you were saying give. So.
Yeah, sure. They're good.
The sheriff's department in San Bernardino, California, posted on Sunday about their adventure luring a pig the size of a miniature horse back home.
Oh, I saw this.
And they write that responding officers knew where the pig lived due to previous calls, and they lured him back home with Doritos.
Look at the size of this thing, Kathy.
Oh, my God.
And they were literally dropping Doritos on the road, like, one at a time, like a trail of breadcrumbs. And they were, and it was just from the deputy's lunch, and the pig followed her and was brought all the way back home with that. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that little piggy went home.
Yes, it did.
My wife follows people on Instagram that thought they were getting a miniature pig. And so when they bought it as a piglet, it was tiny.
They didn't realize it was.
And it lives in their home.
Yeah.
It's not a barn or a farm.
Like 300 pounds, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Merrymead Farm has one of those huge pigs.
Yeah, they can get really, really big.
Giant.
One last story. A group of elderly female residents at the Milton Lodge, a retirement home in England, have been treated to a meal served by scantily clad butlers.
Wow.
Claire Martin, activities co-coordinator at the Milton Lodge, said it was...
activities?
Yeah. It was 89-year-old Joan Corp.
I'd like some spotted dick.
Who thought up the idea. Martin says whenever you ask Joan what she wants that day, she always says she wants a man.
And
these guys are in like Chippendale costumes.
And they, from what I understand, Preston, they will have sex with these women.
So
from what you understand.
The activities coordinator said, so we weren't surprised when she wanted it to be her wish. The home hired men from a company called Hunks and Trunks to serve residents a 3-course dinner. The gentlemen were told to do some, quote, harmless flirting. And the
they don't have sex then.
The eldest resident at the home, Doll Jenkins, who is 99, said she loved the butlers in the buff and has requested for them to come back for her 100th birthday.
Well, that's sweet.
Yeah, so they had a good time.
Getting all turned on.
Yep. All right, there you go. That's what I have in the bizarre file for you.
Just like the telly.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, I'd like to thank Jack Frost Mountain for sponsoring today's podcast. We are headed back to Jack Frost on Friday, March 1st, for our 13th annual Preston and Steve Cardboard Classic. Go to WMMR.com to score lift tickets for just $20 and for details on how to register your sled to compete for cash and prizes. From WMMR and JFBB, where the snow comes first.
French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville has everything you need for the great outdoors and beyond. All the big-name brands, they have them. Visit FrenchCreekOutfitters.com for additional info. French Creek Outfitters, why take a chance with anybody else?
Taking time for yourself isn't selfish, it's self-care. Schedule a massage or facial at your local Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa with a relaxing massage or refreshing facial for just $59.95 for first-time guests. Visit one of their 50 area locations or handandstone.com.
Scoot up Valentine's Day? Diamonds will get you out of the doghouse. Make it up to her with Stevens Angel Heart Diamond Necklace for only $128. Online at IHateStevensSinger.com or at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Stevens Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I want to talk about a new sex position.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
All right. Fine. Now you're going to demonstrate.
What? I'm interested because there was a sex position. Jared Leto was wearing a shirt the other day, and it had all these sex positions listed on it, and there was one that I had never heard of.
There's one. I don't think there are any quote-unquote new sex positions because the
people have been at it for a while.
Sutra has been around for a long time, and that pretty much explores all the different positions that you can be in. But there's one apparently called the Golden Arch.
Yes.
And there's a... for a millisecond.
I know.
You thought?
Just a moment. And then I was like...
No.
I do that all the time.
Consider the source. Annabelle Knight, who is a sex guru, has revealed that...
Does it say that on a business card?
That the Golden Arch sex position is perfect for both couples to receive intense pleasure and is very easy to do. We used to know a sex guru, the girl in Westchester.
Yeah. Yes, and they ran her out of town.
Did they?
Jill McDevitt. Well, they didn't run her out of town.
Like lit torches.
She closed up her shop, and she lives in San Diego now, but she still listens from time to time. Yeah, yeah. She's a good follow on Twitter if you're interested in... positions like the Golden Arches. I mean,
she was awesome.
She's very open.
In
her descriptions. So if you're faint of heart, I wouldn't. But she's written books.
But the position involves a woman, and I'm not going to get graphic about Bill. Don't worry. Well, Bill's out of town.
Bill's out of town. Let her in.
Yeah! She got beautiful boobies.
He's a nose.
Wait a second. My Bill senses are tingling.
It's like Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
Bill's out. You know.
He gets a tingle in his nuts.
In some local store lecturing someone about the third leg of the stool.
And so, you see, I deal with the third leg. Wait a second. Something's going on. Sex talk back in Philadelphia.
Anyway, but I'm not going to get graphic with this, but the position involves a woman sitting on top of her partner so that they have the best view of each other during their sex. Imagine this, Kathy.
Yeah.
You sit. The man sits upright with his legs straight out in front of him.
Okay.
She sits on his lap facing him, but she's on her knees. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay.
So there you go. That's
the way you do it.
Yeah. That's the position.
That's new?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
I think there's a little bit more to it, Preston, if I may. I think basically you're looking as if you're almost playing like crab soccer.
I don't.
It's a woman leaning back.
Well, eventually she can lean back. Yes, okay. That's what this gets into. But the basic position is you're sitting up, guy sitting up, legs straight out on the bed, and she is on her lap, on your lap, facing you on her knees.
And now, where am I sitting when I film it?
And she can lean back.
Yeah, because at some point she's got to be in an arch position,
yes,
correct?
Exactly.
That's it right there. So anyhow, Annabelle said that this head-to-toe position is a great way to have a full view of each other's bodies. She says he needs to sit with his legs straight, and then she sits on top of him with her knees bent over his thighs. She has to lean back and then let the pleasure commence
by
lifting her ankles.
So would you do the Golden Arches? I know you and I are fans of the Arby's with the horsey sauce.
Yes.
A lot of meat.
Plenty of horsey sauce. It says couples can keep eye contact in this position, meaning it is very intimate.
Stop looking at me.
And can help women who find it a challenge to get to that next level.
Ma, she's looking at me.
Annabelle advises that you can lean back slightly to increase stimulation, and couples can also explore each other's bodies for added pleasure.
I want to explore your body.
Yeah.
I love you.
I think what this position does, and again, to be as delicate as possible, it makes things link up properly so that certain spots are hit more comprehensively.
I guess so.
Did I hit that right?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it might be.
And that's the charm of this spot. Now, the Burger King is an entirely different thing.
Yes.
Here's a great comment from somebody that says, doesn't work for fat people.
Hmm. Okay. Sure?
Probably not. No,
it would be a little. If you have a large belly, it might get in the way.
Gets in the way.
Yeah. If you get altitude sickness climbing up your stomach, yes.
If we're going to talk about just physically being able to do certain things, it might be a little bit of an issue.
Steve, what is the Burger King? Is that meat in between two buns or?
Have it your way.
Okay.
It's really, it requires you and a hooker.
All right. So Jared Leto was wearing this shirt and it had all these positions, and one was called the crab.
Yeah. Yeah. You bang a crab.
Oh.
It's really painful.
Can you describe it?
Well, it just said. It just says, right? Here's the
it says cowgirl,
here.
Doggy face, 69 scissors, and the crab.
Have you ever heard of the crab?
I don't know. It sounds like it might be similar to this. It does,
actually.
To the Golden Arch.
Because we talked about the crab soccer.
Yeah. I don't really know. Okay, so we'll have to look that up.
You know, but you bring up a good point, too, President, by people saying, you know, and Norm MacDonald does a bit on it. I got a new position. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You have to imagine all the people throughout time who have been having sex.
Sure.
It's all been done.
Yep. Trying it a different way.
Unless you're doing it on a new invention. Like maybe the first person who had sex in a Tesla.
By the way, and this will speak to Kathy, making your bed in the morning can lead to a better sex life.
Yeah, it
always
I'll
bet you
be.
Make your bed every morning, don't you?
Do you? You make your bed every morning?
Wait a minute. Dennis isn't up by then.
Every day.
She still makes it on top of her. He wakes up with the blankets over him and the pillow on his face.
Yeah.
What the hell?
No, but the bed, I will. I also make Jace make his bed every morning. The beds have to be made,
The beds have to be
listen,
made.
Listen, if you don't have time to put the decorative pillows on, I'll let it slide.
Oh, man.
But if I make the bed, the decorative pillows go on.
You would love my room is very antiseptically clean now, I have to say. I have my little vacuum cleaner. And if I had a cup where I was drinking, I do. And if I had my little cup where I was drinking water, I make sure that it goes back down to the kitchen sink.
Oh God, I love you.
Thank
That's
you.
So sweet. That's so nice. That's really good of you.
I hate decorative pillows. I finally got rid of them.
They stayed
on my bed forever. And I use my bed alone. It's my bedroom.
It's
my
wife, your bed.
Sleep in different rooms. And so for the longest time, the decorative pillows kept getting put on there. I'm like, these are stupid. Nobody ever comes in here but me. I don't care for them. They're just taking up space. And when I put them on the floor, they take up space there
on the
too.
Floor.
So now I've systematically, one at a time, put them in the closet, and now they're hidden away, and they never come out.
It's your room.
It's my room.
I have my room. I've opted to not use decorative pillows, and I replace them with Batman figures.
I have on my bed. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 decorative pillows.
You know, she's like Shelley Long in Cheers, Nick.
11.
You remember the scene where Sam Malone goes over to sleep with her, and he goes in, and he goes, you see him walking out of the room with about 50 stuffed animals and pillows, and he throws them out the window.
Or along came Polly.
Yeah, along came Polly. He actually does the math. on how much time of his life has been wasted by taking the time to put the pillows away and put them back on. And he's like, it doesn't make any sense.
A knife to shred them, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
All right. Casey, just to answer your question about the shirt that Leto was wearing, it's a cover for one of their albums, for 30 Seconds to Mars.
Oh.
It's called America's, the name of the album, and it has those sex positions written on it.
Got
it.
Okay. But, Kath, doesn't that just add extra stress to your life? Or is the...
No, the unmade bed adds stress to my life. Okay. No, I'm kidding. I'm
talking
not kidding.
About the decorative pillow part.
No, it doesn't add... Why? No, I have, like, a little bench at the bottom of the bed, and the decorative pillows are neatly stacked there at nighttime.
I'm surprised you don't have a little trunk at the end of the bed where you can put the pillows in.
Yeah, you know what? I know, but the thing is that 11 usually doesn't fit in the trunk, so I did the bench, and they stack nicely on the bench.
Okay.
All right. I have to get it.
I'm not so sure about that.
At night, I have to get into a freshly made bed. So say on a rare occasion that the bed is not made, I will I straighten the sheets out. And
you call a divorce lawyer.
No, and almost make the bed before I get into it. It's just like, it's more comfy.
And it's neat. I never make my bed, ever. Ever.
Does
ever.
Your wife shut the door to your bedroom, or do you shut the door to your bedroom?
Shut the door.
Not that I ever...
You know she doesn't shut the door. That's how he was busted. No,
shut up.
No, I know, but I'm saying, I'm wondering if she is like, okay, I don't care, but when she... Like, for me, if it wasn't made, I would go by and
just
shut
so
the
you
door.
Don't have to look at it.
Here's what I do, and I honestly, you guys know, I sleep on top of the bed. I sleep on top of the comforter with a blanket. Like a nice... It has little elephants on it.
So you don't actually make your bed. You just don't mess it up.
I just don't mess it up.
Okay.
I tuck it in, though, if there are little creases. And you would find a pristine bit of bedding. In the winter, if it starts to get very, very, very cold, I just press it. You're like me. Even throughout the winter, I have the ceiling fan going. I like the circulation of air.
I absolutely destroy my bed during the night. I mean, with the
you poop a lot.
The pillows and it's an absolute mess. The blankets are in a wad. Pillows are all over the place. By the time I'm done sleeping, what's the point of me making the bed? Because I'm just going
to
do it again.
It's funny because I actually have to have the elephants facing the right way when I sleep.
Jesus.
I know it's so goddamn stupid, but
could
I
you
do.
Force yourself to do it the other way? Just to make you sleep, make you get
It'd
through
be
it?
Hard.
It'd be hard, all right.
I would not be confident that the elephants were looking the correct way.
Mm. Wait, I want to answer that text.
What right. is it? Which
we
one?
Ask
it says,
Kathy if she is a certain way that she stacks the pillow. Yes.
Of course you do.
Exact same way every single time.
The most efficient way, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The two big pillows and then the longer pillow in the middle because it's long enough.
Hang on.
I mean, what am I, running a bed and breakfast?
This is him stabbing the pillows.
Anymore.
You know how many minutes a day I spend getting to throw pillows on and off the bed?
How many?
4 minutes in the morning, 4 minutes at night. That's 8 minutes of my life. I figured it out. It's 56 minutes a week. That's nearly 2 days of my life a year I spend putting pillows on and off a stupid bed.
This poll said from the Just Saying Institute, surveyed 2,000 Americans and found that 42% of those who make their bed said their partner makes them more likely to do so. And a third of people said it would be a turnoff if a potential partner didn't make their bed. They also found that those who make their bed have more sex per week than those who leave the bed unmade.
Quick question, well, Kathy. Does Dennis make the bed when he gets out of it?
He makes the bed, yeah.
All right, well, there you go.
All right, so he's on the same page.
And that means there's a lot of golden arches going on there.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess it happens. speaking of the bed and sleeping, two-thirds of millennials report sleeping naked by a poll that was done by mattressadvisor.com. They're a mattress review site.
Do you sleep naked? Do you porky pig it? Do you sleep bottoms?
Underwear.
Underwear.
Just underwear.
Underpants. Yep. I go back and forth. Yeah. If it's like warm out and especially if like I've just taken a shower, I'll sleep naked. But I think most comfortably boxers, underwear.
I think for me it's a leisure suit.
Okay.
I think it just is the most comfortable way. Because it's leisure. You're sleeping.
Sure.
Yeah.
As long as there's no socks on. I cannot sleep with socks on.
Oh, no. Who can?
Some morons.
Psychopaths.
Yeah, psychopaths.
I think if I didn't have kids... Maybe I would sleep in a nude.
Did you in college?
No. I like college. I passed out most nights. So
fully
dressed.
Shoes on the way back to the dorm.
Yeah. You're lucky if you make it to the bed.
No. In fact, in
the bushes.
My entire senior year. No. Either way, junior and senior year, I basically slept on the couch every single night.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sounds about right.
The holding tank.
Yeah, the holding tank.
So I usually do... underwear and either a shirt or not.
Okay.
My friend's father.
Shoes are right by the bed, though.
And actually, my friend, when all growing up, he had like old man 1950s pajamas, you're biting down.
Who does that?
Yeah. And I also have a question about a nightcap, because that was a thing for a little while that people had little.
You know who I see wearing full pajamas for some reason?
Bill
West.
Burns. Bill Burns.
Oh,
yeah.
Bill Burns.
Yeah. I see Bill Burns.
Yeah, I could see that too.
In full on striped.
Is Mumsy going to tuck me in?
Bill is a
Bill Weston.
Bill Burns maybe could be a full flannel.
Bill Burns,
jammies.
One of our sales managers.
Yeah, he's a button down guy. But I could see that
pajamas.
Yeah, my dad was a bathrobe guy, right? So he'd get up in the morning. And he would go downstairs. He made all of our lunches all through grade school and high school. And he was there. He had this old ass robe that he wore all the time.
My dad was robe and strap on.
Yeah,
strap on.
It was his thing.
If we didn't go to work as early as we do and had a little bit more time, I'd probably do the bathrobe thing.
You'd be a bathrobe guy.
So comfortable.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's too comfortable.
It's a leisurely way to get up in the morning.
It's too much of an inducement to stay in bed and hang out.
Nah, I'd go out on the veranda and enjoy a cup of coffee.
But first, we have to build a veranda.
Right. I'm texting Bill Burns right now to
see if he wears pajamas.
Oh, bet you he wears.
You know,
though,
you see,
pajama guy.
When you get pajamas for Christmas, pajamas.
I found your pajamas.
I'll dry clean your pajamas.
It's from the movie.
They're comfortable as just hanging around the house, but sleeping in them, I would find it too restrictive.
When I was a kid,
too warm.
I did full on pajamas.
Does it say why millennials they believe, or what a general consensus as to why that's the case?
It said, let's see here, the project manager Joe Mercurio.
I can actually guess something if I may.
Yeah.
I think houses have generally the atmosphere and temperature in houses is better maintained these days.
Well, yeah, that's what the nightcap was made to keep
you
warm.
Right. So the aspects of keeping you warm with this clothing is less necessary.
Did you look that up or did you just know that?
The nightcap I looked up.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I don't worry. I'm not that smart. I don't know things like that.
So this guy. Oh, my God. Bill Burns is here.
Mr. Pajamas.
Hey, Bill, I didn't even see you walk in.
You've got me so wrong.
Really?
No way.
Pajamas? Are you completely naked?
Close.
Okay, so what do you wear?
Boxers.
Okay.
Boxers. No t-shirt, nothing. No.
Right. Boxers.
Just boxers.
All right.
No, boxers.
I saw pajamas and a warm glass of
milk. No, absolutely not. What am I, Cowper?
Yeah.
No, oh my God.
No, Cowper's just product.
No, Cowper wears bikini briefs.
I'm actually
I
don't want to get sick. I'm actually almost insulted.
I'm sorry. You're a suit guy. I always see you that way.
Yeah,
you don't like that I put my feet up on the table when we are in meetings.
I'm getting over that.
Okay, I'm good with that. The image is you with the big nightcap and one of those candles that's in the little holder. You know, as you go to bed with a glass of milk.
Does my wife does she warm my milk and then bring it right to the bedside for me, too?
Well, she knows what's good for her.
She and her kerchief and I and my
kerchief. Yes.
That was him.
So you just boxers?
Just boxers.
All right.
Just boxers.
All right, fair enough.
All right. We misread you on that one.
I'm sorry about that. But Bill Weston, on the other hand.
I wear a nightcap.
Yes.
Let me get to this. Your question here, Steve. So he surveyed over 1,000 people across the country, 58% of whom he said sleep in the nude. Nude sleepers also report better sleep quality than pajama wearers. Not surprisingly, men are more likely to sleep naked than women, though more than half of women still report sleeping without any clothes. Only 39% of boomers, which would be of
me,
our age range, your age range, Steve. Yes, I'm sorry. The 39% of boomers sleep in the buff, compared with nearly 65% of millennials, the survey found. Relationships seem to relax people's sleeping habits, with 72% of nude sleepers reported being in a relationship, compared to only half of single people. See, I would think single people would sleep naked more often.
Yeah, why not?
More than half of people who sleep nude report that their partner does as well.
All right, do you go to the bathroom in your bed?
No.
All right, move on.
You know what's nice? If you go to bed naked and your partner goes to bed naked, there is that off chance that will lead to morning sex.
Sure.
You know, and yeah. like this, if everybody's
morning
closed,
is in the morning or M-O-U-R-N-I-N?
No, oh, with no, me, no, it's no. always the second.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
Why
are we doing this?
I regret everything.
All right, so here we go. Hold on. For right. those who prefer pajamas, their reason range from staying warm to anxiety about being seen to just that's how I was raised.
Okay.
Nearly 70% of respondents who sleep naked said they do so because they're more comfortable without clothes. About 58% said nude sleeping was relaxing, and 54% said that it improves their sleep. So it's kind of vague, Steve.
Yeah.
Just like, I just like it that way.
Just a percentage. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah. You wanted me to go to line two, Case?
Yes.
All right. Let me get Cheryl on the line. Hi, Cheryl. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Great. What's up, Cheryl?
Well, married 37 years. My husband's a big man, you know, up 235.
All right. At least. That's old.
Even in the
I'm sorry, of course. Why did I even think that?
But anyway, even in the summer when it's hot, he's in full pajamas, full heavy white undershirt under the top. And boxers.
It's almost like a suit.
Well, is he typically more chilly than other people that you find, you know, and needs to be warm? No.
I would tell you he's a big, warm man. His hands are warm. He's like an inferno.
Okay.
I do not understand it. I'm in like a little teeny sleepy and nothing else, you know, a strappy little nightgown.
Yeah, strap-on nightgown.
I want to have sex.
With the covers kicked off me, he is wrapped up. I don't know what it is.
You're the antithesis of most couples I know. It's usually the woman who is bundled up like crazy.
Yeah.
And the guy who's the opposite.
Now, Press, you
Cheryl.
You like to put on, you have a whole bunch of pajama bottoms, right?
Yes.
What do you call, is that what they're called?
Yeah, I call them pajama bottoms just jammies or whatever.
Jammy
bottoms.
The second you get home from work, you put those on.
I sometimes.
Not, used to be like.
I used to. Okay. Like, I'd walk in the door. I was like the Goldbergs.
Yes.
I'd drop my drawers. but I would put pajama pants on. But I don't do that as much anymore. But that is my, I'm not going anywhere for the rest of the day attire. If I find that that I'm done with whatever I need to do and I'm not leaving the house, it happens to be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, those things are coming on, man.
Do you know what I do? I come home and the pair of shorts that I'm wearing, I almost always have an identical pair of shorts, and I will switch into those because I have my home shorts.
Yes, I got you.
That I can go do dusty things with, like change cat litter, my formal shorts.
Right, your work shorts.
Yeah, my work shorts where I'm trying to put a good image out there. Right.
Let me ask the other men in the room your collective opinion on slippers.
just in the winter, but not to walk around the house. They are, if I need to run outside real quick, if I forgot to take the trash out. Or
why not
I need
around the house?
Because I don't need shoes on while I'm in the house.
Do you guys go to the bathroom in your slippers?
I don't wear slippers in the house.
I poop in my slippers.
In the slipper. Yeah.
No. I'll tell you this. I will wear a more worn down pair of sneakers or whatever in the house.
Yeah, Nick, because I have bad feet, I like to have slippers that have
a support, an arch.
Not necessarily, just pillows, just so it's a softer sort of, yeah. So I have my Homer Simpson slippers.
When you take your elevator chair up the stairs to your sit-in shower.
Yeah, yes.
Do you let your first alert medallion hang out of it so that it doesn't short out in the water?
Nick, I take it you're a slippers guy.
Well, I like slippers in the house as my indoor shoes. So
you're very Asian, though. You're very Japanese. You wash your feet when you come home.
I am very Asian.
And
you have house slippers, basically?
I have house slippers,
like moccasins, almost?
Moccasins.
Or, okay.
Yeah, and I, L.L. Bean, and when I...
kimono?
I don't have one, but I'd love one. I look forward to slipper season, like when because you can't really wear them in the summer because that's insane. Because your feet would sweat too much. But like in the fall through, the spring when it starts to get warm again, those are the months where it's cold out. I enjoy the slippers.
I just kind of walk around in socks and in the house.
That's not enough for me.
Okay,
I walk around in cleats.
Golf shoes.
I just like the sound.
The old stiff spikes. The old metal spike shoes.
Cleats will absolutely ruin your wood floor.
I've noticed.
I learned that.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, let me go to this. I'm going to go to Bill. Bill, you are on the air. Good morning. No. What's up, Bill?
All right, so you guys talking about sleeping in nude, sleeping in PJs.
Yeah.
I, believe it or not, am most comfortable wearing jeans and a t-shirt.
To bed.
To bed.
Huh. How do you do that every night?
Every single night.
Is that a fight or flight kind of thing that you're ready? You want to be ready to.
There's a deer in the house.
Yeah, a deer in the house. That's why I keep my shoes on.
I keep shoes on.
Got a shotgun for that one.
Yeah. So what is that? Is that a psychological thing or care to guess?
I just feel comfortable.
All right.
Well, there. Thanks, Bill. There's something to some people like that.
Sheathed.
Yeah. That kind of. I forgot.
Labia. Constricted.
Not labia.
Swaddled.
Sorry, I was reaching.
Swaddling. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. To be swaddled.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But jeans.
That's what baby Jesus wore jeans.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. You know, like me and my friends, we like to play sand volleyball in our jeans. But that's.
At the Top Gun flight school.
Let me go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, sorry to bother you guys at work.
It's okay. All right, buddy. What's up?
Hey, I had a friend of mine used to sleep naked until his house caught on fire.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, he had to get out, so he's standing out in his front yard, butt naked, watching his house burn and the fire company coming on his way.
Wow. And how long was he standing out there totally naked until somebody gave him something to cover him up?
Well, I guess once the fire department got there, they got him a blanket and got him covered up.
No neighbor could provide something until the fire department. Yeah.
That's a bit of an extreme reason as to why
Shooter
should not sleep naked.
Well, you know.
Well, what if your house sets on fire or perhaps a deer on fire wanders into your house?
Right. Maybe grab the blanket I was sleeping with and...
No, can't do that. Maybe. That's for the bed, Casey.
Well, apparently two-thirds of millennials are sleeping totally naked. So the majority of them in this particular survey. So interesting.
So what you're saying is easy pickings.
Easy pickings, man.
Here comes the MM Army. What's going on?
Wednesday from 5 to 8, join Marissa Magnata and Nick McElwain from MMR's Preston and Steve Show and newlyweds from Camp Out for Hunger as Duncan hosts its first annual Duncan Love Event at the Blue Cross River Rink. Help spread the love with Duncan. Join the aforementioned Marissa Magnata and Captain Morgan Original Spiced Rum Thursday from 7 to 9 at PJ Willihan's in Maple Shade for the official Countdown to Cardboard Party. Register to win the Preston and Steve Cardboard Classic and PJ Willihan's VIP experience, including two rooms, four lift tickets, four passes for the VIP viewing area, and a spot on PJ Sled for their run down the tubing hill.
93.3 WMMR. Everything and everywhere that rocks.
We're ready to welcome our next guest.
Let's do it.
Yes. I'm very, very happy to do this. I saw the trailer for this movie a week or two ago, and I immediately went to you guys. I'm like, have you seen this yet?
Oh, yeah.
And we're pretty excited about the fact that there's a screen tonight with our next guest, who I believe we've had here before.
We have early on in the career. It was actually at the another location.
We're talking about the film Upgrade, and we'd like to welcome the writer and director of said film, Mr. Lee Whannell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice to be back. What was the song called, Lee? So... welcome
Thanks
back.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
After all these years.
Yes.
I think it was for, as you and James Wan in the studio for Saw, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was the first Saw film. We didn't know what we were doing in any regard, in any aspect of our lives. So that was fun. I was a lot younger then, and I remember on that press tour, I wasn't sleeping a lot.
Yeah.
There was a lot of alcohol involved. Now
was
I'm
there?
Too old for that. I'd be doing this interview from the hospital if I was
at that base,
acting like I did back then on this tour.
Yeah. But you guys, look at you. Look what's happened over the years. It's James is directing just did the Aquaman movie, I believe.
Yeah, he did. He did Fast and Furious 7.
Conjuring. You guys with Insidious together. You've written this is your second directorial effort. Insidious 3 was your first.
Yep.
An Upgrade, which looks phenomenal. And to me and to all of us, it has the feel of the joy when we first saw RoboCop or the original Terminator or that kind of, you know, sort of practical effects, but enhanced people.
Those were my influences.
Those
films that I grew up with in the 80s. Do you guys remember the 80s?
Yes, we do. Barely. Oh, yeah.
If you remember them, you weren't there. My local video store was my church, and I used to go there and rent the Terminator, RoboCop, Scanners, The Thing, all this sort of practical effects-driven stuff. And I wanted to use those films as an inspiration for this one because I was making a sci-fi film that was not a big-budget sci-fi film. You know, didn't have a huge amount of money to play with.
Those can be, because of the constraints, the best because they foster a creativity that I like. I like the mix. Listen, we live in a CGI world. I get it.
Yeah.
But I love the mix of practical with CGI. I love the blend of both because
absolutely.
To me, it's more interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great tool. It's like you can use it to augment things that aren't there, but yeah. It shouldn't be the only tool. You know what I'm saying?
Like, well, like in the movies, for example, Starship Troopers, the movie uses CGI effects for the monsters, but the ships are all real.
Yeah.
And they look cool. So in this case, you have Logan Marshall Green.
Yep.
Is the actor, and he's who we remember from Prometheus, a very solid actor. He's a quadriplegic. His wife gets killed,
mm-hmm.
and it's also another one of my favorite genres of films, revenge film.
Yeah,
right. So it incorporates all those things.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to make a classic revenge action film, but wrap it up in this sci-fi story. You know,
which is cool. And as I was just talking to our video guy Nick here about it. Logan appears to, in the movie, he gets this enhancement as a quadriplegic that sort of controls his body, and right. He's almost a passenger in his own body, correct?
Yeah, there is a moment in the movie, I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the trailer, but mm-hmm. Somebody is beating the doot out of him, and STEM, which is the name of the computer chip that's in his neck that controls his body, is like, you know, can I take over?
Right.
And he's like, sure, as this guy chucks him. And then STEM just comes online and sort of, because this computer chip controls everything from the neck down, it can make him do.
Well, he's just sitting there. He knows there. Kung Fu all of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's like just watching himself do all these things that he can't believe he's doing. So it's kind of...
How did you instruct him to get to that physicality? Because I remember, like, with the Peter Weller who played RoboCop, he mimes taught him stuff. But here he's got to look as if he's like responding to his own body, but it's not his body.
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing, and that was the first thing I told him when I spoke to him on the phone for the first time. Is I said, I want your head to be doing something different than your body
right.
in certain sections of this movie, and he was so up for it, and. So basically how he achieved it is Logan really did a lot of training. He would send me all these videos of him moving and I would send him my thoughts and say, you know, less robot dancing, more just move with the fluidity and grace of a ballet dancer.
Right.
So he was doing that. And then right at the end before we shot the film, the cinematographer said to me, you know, I did this music video last year where we locked the camera to the actor. We strapped an iPhone under their clothes to their body so that wherever they moved, the camera goes with them. Kind of gives you this interesting kind of effect where the actor is the center of gravity at all times.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Wherever the actor goes, the camera goes.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this looks awesome. Let's try it. And so we used that for a lot of the action scenes in the film, and it kind of contributes to this computerized robotic feeling.
Now, it's taking place, appears to be a bit in the future.
Yeah, it's not too far in the future. It's like, you know, 15 years from now.
So some of the people he's coming up against also have enhancements of their own.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a world. I mean, we're sort of heading down this path anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I wrote the first draft of this film, automated cars were still science fiction.
Yeah.
And now, in the years that it's taken to develop this movie and get it made, that's just become a thing now.
Did you see the video of the latest Boston Dynamics robot?
That's terrifying.
It is. Thank you.
It's effing terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who's a fan of sci-fi, if you're not terrified by that... But, you know, that's where we're going.
I keep waiting for that moment when my daughter thinks it's perfectly normal to walk into the kitchen in the morning and be like, Alexa, play the Frozen soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
She just thinks it's normal that this voice is like, playing the Frozen soundtrack.
Yeah.
But I keep waiting for that moment where it's just, Alexa just flips and is like, all humans must die.
Right. By the way, speaking of Alexa, did you know that, like, she takes a log of everything that you ask her? And if you go to your app, you can actually go back in time and see everything that you ever asked her, which... For me, is hilarious because my mom lives with me now. And...
So you can see what your mom's in?
Oh,
wait. Does your mom live with you or do you live with your
mom? No. My mom lives with me and my family. Okay. Yeah, it's different. Yeah. So it's more acceptable. But she's, you know, 70-year-old woman and she the things that she has to ask her.
That's so funny.
And you know, just sitting in the kitchen, she didn't realize that she had to, like, say her name every time she needed a command. So she'd be like, shut up.
Stop.
Shut up.
Well, you know, I don't know what I said to alert Alexa, but she laughed when we were all in my kitchen and we were laughing.
That's
and
terrifying.
I thought, oh, my God, somebody came through my back door and turned around and realized it was her.
I read about this. So you're an actual living case of, because I read about this online, that Alexa was just laughing. It'd be 3 o'clock in the morning and Alexa's like, yeah. You're like, that's not scary. Not at all.
But yeah.
It's an anomalous thing that even Amazon had to do a little digging to find out why it was happening.
I think it's some like sort of pranky coder somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, this will really mess him up.
Because we were laughing. So she was laughing with us.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But this speaks to that.
Judgment Day begins.
And Skynet and the whole thing.
Skynet's on just going online.
Just gone online. But this speaks to that. And our inherent fascination with, can we enhance ourselves? Preston was talking about the line that Jeff Goldblum has in Jurassic Park, which is...
Yeah, you were worried about whether or not you could. You didn't think... Or, yeah, whether or not you should.
Yeah. That line always reminds me of Patton Oswalt, the comedian, has this routine where he's like, we just made cancer airborne and contagious. You're welcome. We're science. More concerned with coulda instead of shoulda.
I think
that is the case with humans, where so often the architects of our own destruction. We're like, I just built this thing that blows up and takes out an entire city. That'd be good to have around.
And so I'm
wondering where this whole road is going of delegating everything to computers. Like, well, computers can drive my car for me and they can run my kitchen. And they can love my kids. Like, where does it...
Right. Well, that point, that's why you had people like... I'm having a brain fart. Tesla.
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is not a tremendous... Even though the automated cars, he's responsible for a tremendous advance in that. He's very leery of AI, as was Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
And this deal, because of what eventually it could be. I don't know if you're a fan of the series Black Mirror.
Yep.
But there was a metalhead, I think it was called. But it realizes a world in which it does get away from us. And, I mean, that is a stone-cold chilling possibility.
It's weird because, you know, Elon Musk, he's been saying, like, you know, the biggest threat to humanity is AI, you know, bigger threat than North Korea, et cetera. And at first you're like, oh, come on, what movies have you been watching? And then you're like, wait, that's Elon Musk. He's a pretty smart guy.
He
knows some things we don't.
Yeah.
So maybe we should be more worried about it if he is.
Yeah, to that end, though, I watched this TED Talk yesterday, and the guy that was speaking said, you know, if every insect on the planet died, within 50 years, all life on the planet would cease to exist. If every human on the planet died, all life would return to the planet and flourish, right? So there's this...
Thrive.
Would thrive, right. Every other life form would thrive on the
planet.
Not
a fan of that arrangement.
But it's probably accurate. Yeah. However, what humanity has going for it is imagination and creativity. So to that end, there are stories like yours that can be told. And I think that therein lies the beauty of what you do.
Yeah. I always love that line from The Matrix. The Hugo Weaving character is like, that he says that machines figured out that humans were the cancer on the planet.
Yes. Yeah.
That's right. Mr. Anderson. That's my best Hugo Weaving in the Matrix.
It's very good. It's very good.
Sorry.
You were in the, you had a bit part in the original Matrix or Matrix Reloaded?
It was the sequel.
Okay.
It was the second one, which I was very excited about. I got two lines, which was cut down to one. I was shattered. They actually spelled my name wrong in the credits, which was very...
Yeah.
I was like, they never cared. They didn't care at all.
What was your line in the movie?
It was, how much time?
Wow. That's good.
Yes. And then the guy I was now, like, guys, come on. In terms of delivery of that line, that's awesome. One of the better deliveries of that line.
Oscar caliber.
The guy I was with, his response was 12 minutes. So it was wonderful.
Wow. Oscar, you delivered both lines quite well.
Yeah, you know, I could have played that role. But
what line
did
they cut out?
I think they cut out incoming. And I remember the American dialogue coach, because it was shot in Australia with all these Australian actors doing American accents, and they had this sort of American for hire on set who would correct you on your R's. And she said, you know, Americans don't say incoming. we put the emphasis on in. And I was like, no, you're wrong. No, I've seen enough movies. I know more than you do, American person.
You were right. No, we do not. Some people say insurance, but they won't say incoming.
Like if you're out in the war zone and the grenade's coming towards you, you're not saying incoming, guys. Incoming. Yeah. No, that's not going to get the message across to Sergeant Stevenson.
Exactly.
Incoming! That's how you say it.
That's why you do what you do. When you and James Wan started working together, was that as a reaction to sort of, you know, as you as an actor trying to get a leg up, we'll just create our own stuff?
Pretty much. That was exactly it. He wanted to be a director and quickly found out after film school that people don't go around handing checks to film directors.
Yeah.
And we just were so frustrated that and this is the advice I always give aspiring filmmakers when they're like, oh, do you have any advice? I say, just make your own stuff. Just get a camera, get some friends, and make stuff.
Yeah. You know? Well, how much did Saw cost?
Well, the producers tried to tell us at the time it was $1 million, but looking back, I think it was about $28.
It does look, it is, but it's a perfect movie for those, and I always say, you know, we took Frank Grillo's a friend of the show, and the Purge movies, high concept, low cost. If it hits, as Saw hit, you're the darling.
And the horror genre is really
perfect,
friendly towards low budgets.
Yeah.
Audiences, anyone.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, because I want to stay on Saw for a second.
Yeah.
It could be a stage production.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it's two guys chained up in a toilet, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So I think the Broadway version of Saw is a good idea. In fact, this is the first time it's been floated. Yeah, exactly.
Nathan Lane
is Jigsaw. Yeah. I want to see the actor that has to lie still on the floor for the entire production.
I know.
Like,
oh,
Jesus, I really had to sneeze during that one. Well, you know, two ribs trying not to sneeze during that run.
Actually, that could work. I mean, you have certainly a level of gore that you have to achieve.
Yeah, know? I mean, although it can be. I saw this play years ago called The Lieutenant of Inishmore. It was written by the guy who directed Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Martin McDonagh. And he's this great Irish playwright, but this play is so bloody and violent. It was at the intermission, half the audience just left. So it is possible.
Okay, all right. So with this film, and the reaction has been great. Actually, I was reading, there was one review of it, and it's from one of the genre mags, says, latest film upgrade is one of the most strikingly invigorated sci-fi watches. I've been awestruck by this film, and that has not happened in quite some times. And the reaction is like that. For you, for your second film, writing and directing, is that a double-edged sword? Because it's awesome, the reactions like that, but it always with what you do in your career, it's what's next?
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to try to enjoy reactions like that because films take so long to make. Whenever I hear a filmmaker in an interview say, like, I just ignore the reviews, I don't understand that because, you know, you're putting so much of yourself into the film. You want to know how the world feels about it. But that review was... I remember that one. It was particularly great. And I remember my dad, I flew him over we premiered the film at South by Southwest. So I was like, Dad, you're coming to Texas. Flew him over from Australia. And I read him that review and he goes, oh, that's great. Must have taken you ages to write it. which is just my dad's sense of humor. But that was one of the first reviews I read. And yeah, it's
what
good.
You want.
So I don't want to kind of start thinking about what's next straight away. I want to kind of enjoy this movie. I mean, even just being here chatting to you guys, it's fun. It's fun to try to promote the movie, you know?
Sure. If you're just jumping in, Lee Winnell is here, and Upgrade is going to be in theaters. Speaking of writing, when you sit down to create something original, how do you make sure that somebody hasn't already done that and you don't know about it? There are so many people that write.
Usually what happens is somebody will tell you. You'll get really excited about an idea and you'll pitch it to one of your friends and they'll say, yeah, I saw that movie last year. That was.
You have to worry about that because I read an interview with you and you talked about your ability to shut off your director-writer and just enjoy movies on their visceral level and go in and be a fan and be in the audience and watch a movie and enjoy it. But with that, and I think with anything, like Preston, you know, a musician or anything, have I heard this before?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be the same thing with music where somebody's like, oh, yeah, great riff. I loved it back in 73 when
ABBA played it.
Yeah, when ABBA did it. And it's with, you know, the worst thing with movies is actually when you put all the work in and you're shooting the film. So the train has left the station. You are doing it. And then you hear about a similar film coming out. Nobody wants to be on the set of Deep Impact when you find out Armageddon's coming out. It's like, oh, Jesus.
It has happened. True. In fact, one of the classic stories is two movie studios. One was working on a movie called The Tower. And the other one was working on a movie called The Glass Inferno. And that 20th Century Fox, I think Warner Brothers said,
well, let's just make a movie together.
Is that true? They actually just combined.
The Towering Inferno is a combination of two movie projects.
That is the only example I've ever heard of two Hollywood studios being like, let's just be friends and work together. Usually it's like, let's ruthlessly cut the knees out from this Glass Inferno movie.
Let's just destroy it.
And you remember back in the 80s, Lee, like there was like a series of body switching movies, young and old. Yeah. And there were like four of them. And the last one that came out was Big from Tom Hanks. And it was the most successful.
And that's the only one. Like, nobody's walking around going, you know, that Vice Versa movie was really, just love Judge Reinhold.
Yeah.
It was like Big's, that usually history, you know, history's written by the winners, right?
So yeah,
Big is the one that everybody talks about. And, you know, it's like not too many people are walking around talking about ants. A Bug's Life was the victor. It was the victor in that little battle.
And ants had Seinfeld behind it, didn't it?
That was the Bee movie.
That's right. So nobody remembers that movie as well. Look at that. This perfect example. Yeah.
Wait, was Fred Savage in the Judge Reinhold one?
Yes.
Okay. He was. All right.
And then there was a couple more.
Dudley Moore and Kirk Cameron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the Kirk Cameron one before he started his other movie career.
Yeah. Lee, is it... you're on social media, obviously. You know, I'm looking at your Twitter account right now, and I'm wondering if that is can be landmines when it comes to creativity, because I'm sure people tweet stuff at you. Mm-hmm. Hey, I've got this great idea, and you basically have to ignore it and not even acknowledge it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it can really get you in trouble, and it's actually a dangerous thing, especially now with social media, because everybody's making videos, putting them on YouTube, and the sort of bandwidth for did you see that or not. Like, if you wanted to present that case in court, you could say, hey, I made a short film and this guy totally ripped it off. And
just happened with Stranger Things.
Oh, really?
Same thing. And now, chronologically, I think the Duffer Brothers are the guys behind that or whatever. They were able to prove chronologically that they had submitted an idea that was before.
Somebody said they ripped off their script.
Yes. Yeah. And
so it had to go to court. It had to be litigated.
But I think it didn't make it all the way. But still, that presents a legal cost and things.
I do actually say that sometimes if someone says on Twitter, like, can you read my script? I'm like, it's a good way of saying I can't. I literally can't read your script just in case.
It can be a bad deal. Yeah, absolutely. So with obviously, you know, the Insidious films, which are great and continue to be so, where does this franchise keep going and going and going? Because it is, you know, I think the first couple are the best, you know, whether we love Lynn Shay.
Yeah.
In the studio, she's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's really the reason they work.
Yeah, she is. At this point, she's the glue that kind of holds that franchise together. I mean, it's interesting with sequels, because I obviously wrote that first Saw movie, and then the producers made like I think 32 more Saw movies.
Yes.
And at some point the third one was the last one I was involved with, and I was like, you know, guys, I'm out. I can't think up any more ways to kill someone with a coat hanger. And so they kept going. So it's a weird feeling, because I don't actually own the copyright to Saw, but the producers kept making
that
movies.
That kind of stinks.
So, yeah, it was...
Is it like watching your Dr. Frankenstein and your monster is out, has left the lab?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a weird feeling to be like driving down the street and see a billboard for something you created, but it's no longer...
Yours.
Yeah. Yours. Yeah. It's gone. So, but I'm not ticked off about it, because I'm just happy to be making films at all. That's the very definition of a champagne problem. Like, can you believe they're making sequels to my hit film? I mean, you think they've got a bad in Syria. So I definitely know to keep my head in line with
keep
that
it
stuff.
In perspective,
but
yeah.
With the Insidious movies, I think I have a better relationship with Jason Blum, in terms of he would always come to me first and say, do you want to make another one?
Yeah, I and this is no offense, I can't watch those movies. They terrify me too much.
In the horror world, that's a compliment.
Yeah, it is.
Preston would be in that world as well. I'm ravenous for them. I love them, and I think that first Insidious, especially because the combination of you and James, the directing skill. Yeah. When you take things, I think it's one of the great aspects of horror, and you stick them in, so you have a scene that's in broad daylight in a living room.
Yeah.
Which is one of the biggest scares in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's as with that Texas Chainsaw Massacre, with that first scene of Leatherface, it's in broad daylight in a pleasant, breezy sort of afternoon. That just that throws you on your ass. And so you're obviously a fan of that kind of...
Oh, yeah.
This is not a place where you encounter this.
I think you always have to consider, okay, what haven't we seen before? So with that particular scare you're talking about,
I was thinking, let's do something in broad daylight so the audience won't be waiting for it.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Because it's audiences these days, they're pretty savvy. They can sort of outthink you. So you have to be thinking five moves ahead, like,
right,
to stop them from predicting what you're going to do.
And as horror fans, we appreciate that effort.
Yeah.
when I was in from the, like, I saw the trailer and I'm like, this is speaking to me.
Badass, exactly, yeah, right.
It looks fantastic.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. It's great to see you again and continue success, sir. We appreciate you coming by.
Thank you.
Lee Whannell, guys. Yeah.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Disturbed. Are you ready? Ghost. The Glorious Sons.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
In Michigan at a Best Buy. They got the surprise on Wednesday night when a special visitor came in. It was a six-point buck and managed to follow a customer into the store. The team leader, Aaron Ellison, said it was wild.
Where are your HDMI cables?
Ellison had just happened to be near the front door at the time. She said that she didn't realize what it was at first. She and the other Best Buy, the others in Best Buy quickly determined there was a deer running freely through the aisles. She said, we put some customers in our break room back in there.
Oh, they got to see what's in the break room.
They said there was a lot of screaming and havoc. The deer was running through the aisles.
Well, a six-point buck at a full clip?
It's dangerous.
Very dangerous.
It was knocking over items until it ended up in the back of the store. She said, we turned the fridges and used boxes and kind of gave him this aisle so that he wouldn't make it into the back into the store.
It was in a panic because it was looking for CDs and they no longer carry them.
Well, here's the deal. So it was, they have tile in the store, and then she said the deer couldn't stand or move.
Wow.
Because it was trying to move and was slipping.
That's right. They do.
So it eventually sat down, she said, and that's when employees moved in and ushered the deer toward the back door.
I'm done.
Once on the carpet, he could stand again, and he went right out. There were no injuries to the deer or people in the incident.
You wonder where these places are, you know, how, you know, like across the parking lot. Though I shouldn't talk. We'll see deer in the parking lot right here.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And lately, the past month, every morning I see, on minimum, at least five, and sometimes I see as many as a dozen.
In the rutting season now?
It might be rutting season. I'm not sure. So I'm bringing up this story because I think we're going to have somebody on from this particular team when we're in London. And an announcement was made that said, can the owner of a car blocking an emergency exit please speak to your nearest usher? Well, normally the offending vehicle is not owned by the goalkeeper who happens to be playing in a soccer match the time. Dulwich keeper, his name is Preston Edwards, ignored the announcement the first two times that his car registration was read out over the public address system in Thursday night's match between Dulwich Hamlet and Premier League Crystal Palace, and a game was set up as a fundraiser. However, when the third message stated that the car was being towed, he couldn't concentrate on the game. He's playing in the game, and they made an announcement. His car is blocking. He turns to the crowd behind him and shouted, "That's my car," which only resulted in chants. The crowd started chanting, "Preston, move your car. Preston, Preston, move your car."
And that's clever.
And eventually the car was safely moved by a member of the crowd. Edward said on Twitter, the first two times I ignored it, and the third time they mentioned it, getting towed, that's when I panicked. He said that he had parked the car in the incorrect place because he was running late and saw no spaces. But sadly for Edwards, his team conceded five goals in a 5-0 defeat, or 5-0 defeat against Palace.
Yeah, he was distracted.
Yeah. A group of employees in Southeast China have been publicly shamed by their boss for failing to meet their sales targets. Bizarre footage has emerged showing 30 male workers stripped down to their underwear and parading around the streets in the city, much to the surprise of nearby residents.
Where is this?
It's in China. They were sales associates of a gym and had failed to reach their expected profit.
So they marched them through the streets in their underwear.
They did that, yes.
Yelling shame?
The scantily clad men were forced to walk to do the walk of shame for failing to meet their sales quotas. Dressed only in their underwear, the embarrassed men were filmed briskly walking in a straight line on the street.
Wow.
And apparently the manager said, "I gladly accept the punishment handed to me by the company."
Our female staff do not need to do the walk of shame. They are required to do push-ups as punishment instead, he added. It's a good challenge for us, I think.
Okay.
According to the Article 88 of China's employment contract law, employers are not allowed to humiliate and give corporal punishment to workers, Chinese government said on its website. But the employers will be liable for compensation if any harm is done. But Chinese companies have been known for carrying out public humiliation rituals as punishment for... from crawling on the street to worm eating.
So this is in violation of their own laws.
It is, yes.
Okay.
But they do it anyway.
Sort of like, is it sort of like a so it's something, I'm looking at the footage of the guys here. It seems like they're sort of, they're not totally browbeaten. It seems like they're sort of going along with it.
But it's intended to shame, it's a punishment.
Is
for,
it? Yeah.
For not reaching their goals. So that's what they're
should we do that here? Institute yeah. that here? Mm-hmm.
A man ate a Tide Pod and then destroyed $7,500 worth of hospital equipment during an out-of-control hospital rampage. Brandon McVeigh began yelling loudly while smashing four computer screens during treatment for swallowing the detergent capsule at Mercy Hospital. And his alleged spree of destruction began while hospital staff were treating him. They saw McVeigh trash both his own hospital room and a hallway, police said. McVeigh was finally brought under control when police arrived at the hospital, pinned him to the ground, and placed him under arrest.
Listen, you can't do that. You're a smart guy. You eat Tide Pods.
Report noted that the building was strewn with smashed computer equipment and debris. McVeigh was charged with second-degree criminal mischief. And earlier this year, of course, Procter & Gamble, who manufactured the capsules, issued a statement condemning the detergent swallowing trend referred to as the Tide Pod Challenge. I didn't know anybody was still doing that.
Yeah, it's a little after the fact, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, and then one more story, and we will wrap things up. Let's go with this one. A Louisiana man was jailed this week for allegedly bilking the federal government out of more than $500,000. Authorities said it's one of the biggest inside thefts ever committed at the U.S. Postal Service.
Jeez.
Ryan Cortez was arrested at the North Kenner Post Office, where he serves as customer service manager. Now, a complaint alleges that Cortez stole approximately $630,000 in stamps and sold them on eBay at discount prices.
$630,000 in stamps?
You know, how many stamps would that be? And he did so to support a gambling addiction.
Okay.
An investigation into Cortez was launched earlier this year. When
I have a stamp scheme in mind.
When PayPal and eBay notified federal authorities that he had been selling significant quantities of stamps, in at least one instance, 10,000 stamps with a face value of 50 cents each were sold for 38 cents each.
How much less exciting would Ocean's 11 have been if it was a stamp theft?
A subsequent investigation revealed that as manager Cortez had increased the post office reserve stamp stock by more than $600,000.
So what I need to know is what kind of storage. I mean, I'm thinking that's a F of a lot of stamps, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they also found that he had made regular ATM withdrawals at Harrah's Casino in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
Authorities said it was determined that he had gambled and lost more than $667,000 since 2011. His gambling losses from last year amount to more than $220,000, which is over three times his $70,000 annual postal salary.
Dear
postal
God.
Salary. Yeah, so.
Dear God.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
All right, and there you go. That is what I have in this morning's Bizarre File.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Dave Joyce. Celebrating our area's best talent. Bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Hear and see more at WMMR.com. Keyword local shots. Dave Joyce, Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month. Sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
The Trash, brought to you by Dunkin'. Girl Scout cookie-inspired flavors are back at Dunkin'. Enjoy $2 medium lattes and cappuccinos from 2 to 6 p.m. Preston and Steve run on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Steve, what's going on this morning?
Well, pro gaming YouTuber FaZe Censor has split with Yannette Garcia, the woman voted both hottest weather girl and best butt on earth by Mexico, so he can devote more time to playing Call of Duty. Said Censor, quote, "I am gay." A Charles Manson painting, partially composed of the serial killer's ashes, has ended up in the Museum of Ghost Adventures host Zach Baggins. Baggins says the painting is supercharged with paranormal energy and is not supercharged with paranormal energy.
Oh my God.
And finally, Meghan Markle's annoying sister, Samantha Markle, telling Good Morning Britain that Meghan isn't the only family member to be courted by royalty. Samantha told co-host Piers Morgan that she was once engaged to a king of Caesar salads named Alfie.
Oh, that's great.
That's your Hollywood trash.
All right. Over the weekend, the St. Louis Cardinals had a game, and their catcher had a nasty little injury that took place.
Oh,
my
God.
Yadier, is that how you say his name, Nick?
Yeah.
Yadier Molina was placed on the 10-day disabled list on Sunday. He got hit in the balls with a 102-mile-per-hour pitch from reliever Jordan Hicks.
I hadn't seen it until just now.
Yeah, they got a good slow motion shot of it, and you see the.
Well, it doesn't even bounce.
No, and it was tipped by the hitter, and it went down, and it just hit him.
Oh my God!
So he's ready to catch it. The tip knocked it down below his prepared glove, and it catches him right sub ball. Upper taint area,
yeah,
and cause some
and
severe damage.
You can see the shock wave.
Yeah, you see it move. Hits.
Yeah,
but now he's wearing protection.
Of course
right?
he is. He's yeah, wearing okay. a cup.
He's wearing very thick panties.
Well, no, because I mean, honestly, if he wasn't that, I mean,
that would have been far. But still, well, it's surprising that. So as much as you think those things, like you know, the protection is going to really. There ain't no way you're getting a ball at that velocity hitting you in your groin is not going to do some damage, and he had to be. Taken off the field, and was there surgery, right?
I don't know if there's surgery or not.
I saw a hockey goalie. Who was that? I can't remember.
Flat Nuts McGillicuddy.
No. But what he did is he put on a cup like you would see like that catcher wearing.
Yeah.
So he had that on, all right? And then he put like a bigger cup over that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
so he was double cupped.
Now, granted... hockey goalies are, you know, much more bulky and,
yes.
and you know, baseball catchers can't be, I maybe they can be, but I mean, that is a fear of mine.
Of getting a hockey puck slapped into your ball sack?
A baseball, you know,
baseball.
And I do, because my kids play baseball and softball.
Yeah.
I'm around it quite often and every now and again, they'll ask me to, hey, can you catch this pitcher? I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
you know? You're I'm not wearing a cup.
Is there anything that indicates, Nick, if there was any...
Yesterday, Molina went underwent surgery for what the team has called a pelvic injury. it's like a hockey saying there was a lower body injury.
Right, yeah.
But a pelvic injury with a traumatic hematoma, and he's on the 10-day DL, like Preston said, but he's going to be out for at least a month.
God almighty.
Think about it now, if that hit him in the, you know, if that caught the cup, it may not be his testicles per se, because, you know, that... The way that cup is shaped, if you, you know, shove that into, if it pushes really hard, it could be, like, it could leave, like, a triangular bruise around
it. It could
there.
Have ruptured the sacchial region as the cup collided with the nutchicles.
Well, that thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about, like, you know, the Like the gap between your leg and your...
Yeah. Take your pants off and show us.
Yeah, okay.
The thing is, it's not like...
All right.
So it's not like the cup, you know, like so totally surrounds your
no
your
doesn't.
Area
no
because it's the cup actually goes in kind of a sock thing, you know
right
you know what I mean yeah. So it's
and that
not,
goes inside a bustier
no but and that just goes over your balls
so
right
you know
Yadier Molina has a brother named Benji who's also a catcher in the majors. He's not in the bigs anymore, but he was visited with his brother after the surgery, and this is a direct quote. He says doctors were able to save both of Molina's testicles.
Okay.
And
the surgery right, lasted
so it was an injury to the testicles.
Yeah, the surgery lasted 45 minutes and but that was a concern going in, was that they might have to remove one.
Well, cuz if you look at the footage again as it goes down, that's it's hitting right in the lower ball upper taint region. I'm using medical terms here, so you need to follow along. But, yeah, you can clearly see that's where it hits.
Did you guys see? It was on – I saw it on Facebook
Boom.
Last month. Oh, geez, I can't watch it anymore.
I know.
It was on Facebook a couple of last month where these two guys were in a kickboxing match, two Asian guys, and maybe 20 seconds into the match, the dude just hauled off and kicked the other dude straight in the balls. And I It looked like his nut just blew up the size of a grapefruit.
Like right there?
Yeah, right there.
So they both sat down and had breakfast.
Yeah, match is over at that point, yeah.
They don't have a spoon and some sugar?
Wow.
It's amazing, too, because again, Steve, to use technical terms here, the grazing of the balls hurts more than a direct punch sometimes.
Oh, yeah, a nut tap.
The tap.
A nut tap can do far more sometimes than a direct. It's almost like the common belief is that had the Titanic pointed directly at the iceberg, it would not have sank. Mm-hmm. It was the grazing that sunk the Titanic.
I don't know. I don't think I've had enough experience to say.
Like a full-on punch?
Well, yeah, I've had.
You're not
moments,
a ship's captain, Preston.
Obviously, but I can't say that the graze hurts more than the actual full on.
Oh, my ball!
Well, I don't know. I think they both got to hurt pretty.
Oh,
damn
they're both
bad.
Unpleasant.
And I would think that the full on punch would hurt a lot worse.
Well, at one time when I was in eighth grade, some girl for no reason just hauled off and kicked me right in the balls For no reason.
Wow.
We were at a birthday party. We were at Jay Matthews' house.
You didn't do anything to her?
No. Nothing. No.
You didn't mention Melmac out of turn?
I might have been talking about Alf.
Who was she?
I don't want to say her name.
Well, maybe she can call in and explain.
I don't even know if she'll remember. But I don't want to say her name because she's a nice human being. I don't necessarily know.
She shouldn't be known as a ball kicker.
Yeah. Okay. But she hauled off and kicked me straight in the nuts, and it hurt really, really bad. And then another time, and I've told you guys about this before.
She liked you, you know.
I got double bounced off of a trampoline. You know, I went a good 5 yards up in the air and came straight down on the post. Mm.
When we were in college, we had a friend named Dave, and there was a girl named Christy who had a crush on Dave. And we were all drunk at a party one time, and Christy's like, I can't get Dave's attention. I really want him to like me. So the advice that we gave her while intoxicated was, go up and kick him in the balls.
Oh, my God.
And so she did. She went up and she hauled off and she kicked him square in the nuts.
Oh, my God.
Dave bent over, as you would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Doubled over in pain. And she's like, why'd you tell me to do that? And we're like, why'd you listen? But she got his attention.
Yeah, that's a guy. If she was unaware of the ramifications of a full ball kick, she probably shouldn't have been with him in the first place.
Wow. You know what's funny about the full ball kick is when I was in, you know, like middle school, high school, and so on and so forth, if you were to ever face, you know, getting in a fight,
yeah,
that was an absolute unwritten rule. And if you did that, you were, I mean, like, you'd be exiled.
Ostracized.
I mean,
because it's complete breach of protocol.
It's just flat out not fair. And I would think that's even if you were full on defending yourself.
Yes, because
you would be considered a pussy if you did that.
You'd be a pussy. It was the dirtiest of tactics. And I think probably they would have considered you losing the fight.
Yeah, I don't think that exists anymore, though.
No,
I think nuts, if it'll get you out of a bit, you know.
You're allowed?
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, what if you have no chance in this fight? You know what I mean? Like,
if you're defending for your life, but if it's an after school.
But
I don't even know if they exist anymore.
I couldn't imagine, you know, like my son is on the shorter side. If he had to, like, fight a sixth or seventh grader who had size on him and he had one choice and one choice only to end this thing. So,
against equals.
No way. But if there's a total mismatch, you better guard your balls because that's what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm.
Bro.
Let me see. I'm going to go here. Jack had to get one removed from an incident. Hey, Jack, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Oh, between 9th and 10th grade, the summer, I was at the YMCA going up the high dive like 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And that last time, as soon as I hit the water, I knew something was wrong.
Oh, no.
And what happened is it got twisted.
Oh!
Ow.
So throughout the night, it was just getting bigger bigger, more swollen and more swollen. And by the next morning, it was just, like you guys had said, it was big as a grapefruit.
Wow.
So just the process of hitting the water twisted it around?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So you go to the hospital, I guess.
So I was brought to the hospital where they said this is gonna hurt, and they just twisted it back, and it did hurt. I passed out. And then I was admitted to the hospital, and for 3 days they were just trying to do all these different things. Ice, whirlpools.
Luckily for you, the best nut man in the business was in the hospital that day.
they did end up removing it, and before they removed it, they said, okay, if we're going to go and try to keep it, if we can't, do you want a prosthetic one? So at 14,
they do have them.
I had to choose whether I wanted to have a fake one put in or not.
And what was your decision?
My decision was, any girl that's going to go there, I'm either going to be in love with or don't care about.
Yes.
And I chose not to have it.
Okay. All right. And Jack, what was, word had to make it around the school after that had occurred. So what was life like after that?
You know, I owned it. You know, it became a topic. It actually worked in my favor. You know, some girls, you know, wanted to see.
Yeah.
And
there you go, man.
That's never a bad thing.
Three daughters later, it all worked out.
All right.
Yeah, okay. No stopping you, man.
Any nicknames that came up from that, Jack?
Lots of one ball, whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Uni ball. Yeah.
Guys are very clever.
Aren't they? Hey, one ball.
Hey, one ball. Hey, because you have one ball. We're going to call you one ball because you're one ball.
One of the first texts we got was one nut Jack.
Yeah. That's... One nut Jack, but one ball guy that you are.
Yeah.
Hey, one ball guy.
Hey, because he has one ball. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it.
Guys, go with the simple.
Honestly, if I had like a testicular cancer, I had to have something removed.
Yeah.
I would have to tell everybody that I had prostate cancer or something like that, because for the rest of my life,
it's cooler.
Kruk, you always hear about John Kruk and Lance Armstrong. I don't want that being my legacy.
Tom Green,
who we have? Tom Green. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Apparently with Jack, they were lining up to see his junk.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a,
it's
an opportunity for some people.
For some people. Some people may voluntarily have one removed just to have something to talk about.
Let me go to Mike J. Mike, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's up, Mike?
Hey, a few years ago, I was involved in a motorcycle accident,
mm-hmm.
and I flew over the handlebars, and I busted out my pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
I had to have plates put in, a couple screws. Oof. Well, during the operation, the blood had pulled, and it pulled down to my sack.
Uh-huh.
It was as big as a small kickball that kids use in a playground.
So like a Red Spalding.
God.
All right. So give me your best guess diameter of this thing.
It was, I never really got to see it.
They didn't give you a tape measure?
One nurse would have to lift slightly up and another nurse would put a sheet underneath of it to take the weight off of it.
Oh my God. Oh good Lord.
Dear Lord.
That happened. That was for maybe about a week and a half.
Oh, my God.
And it sort of subsided.
They didn't have to drain it or anything, Mike?
No.
Wow.
Listen, we're going to have to drain it for you.
Wow.
And that's when the slow jazz music comes in.
But that would not seem enjoyable.
Your testicles the size of a kickball. We're going to have to drain it for you.
Thanks, Mike.
It was just a skin that blown up into the pool of blood.
So, at a certain point... you have to tap that blood out, right? Or does it get reassimilated back into the body?
It just absorbed. They said it would absorb back.
Did it turn reddish, purple, black, or what?
I was told it was a bruised look.
Like bruised look, yeah.
Purple balls. Come on, everybody, raise up your hands.
Man, that's nasty. Let me see, and I'm going to code two. Here we go.
I am crossing my legs. Horrific.
John. Hey, John, good morning.
Hey, it's Cade.
Cade's on the phone.
That was fast.
What's up, John?
Hey, guys. A story, I was in high school, and this was in when ball tapping was all the rage.
Yes.
All the rage.
Yeah. So I was stretching up against the lock, you know, arms above my head, you know, just stretching 7 o'clock in the morning. One of my buddies literally drops to one knee, ball taps me square on, two nuts. So I drop to the ground, rolling back and forth, can't breathe. Teacher comes up to me, John, stand up. Rolling back on the ground, can't breathe. I get two side detentions because I would not listen to my teachers telling me to stand up.
You had a ball tap. You're in the throes of the agony of said double ball tap, and the teacher would not hear your reasoning?
You got it.
Huh.
Wait, your parents didn't back you up on that, John?
It wasn't worth it. I just took my lumps and...
Wow.
I would have fought nut and nail. Or whatever.
I wasn't the most...
reputable student back then.
Okay, so, you had a reputation.
Oh,
I got you.
All right.
Gotcha. Enough said.
By the way, ball tap, if you're going to do it, it's got to be the back of the hand. You can't do it with the...
Otherwise, you're a male prostitute.
What, is that part of the rule?
Yeah.
You can't
otherwise you
cut
just,
them and squeeze them hard. Yeah, yeah.
Feeling your friend's balls. Yeah.
So you got to do this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Please don't. That was too hard. That was... You got to go a little bit lighter than that.
All right. Well, I was hitting your hand. I was going to hear
it. I gently massage.
The ball tap did not exist amongst my circles. That never happened.
No, we actually alluded the ball tap.
There was a tremendous amount of respect for your testicles when I was a young man.
What about
things have changed these days.
What about a finger in the butt?
No, that was when I was, that's when I graduated from high school. That was amongst the band members. The
cheese curl?
What do we call that? Yeah, cheese curl, but... we called it the surprise.
The rectal police baton.
Yeah. Let me go to... there's a number of guys.
I love the various sizes that the inflamed, engorged testicles
have
got.
That's what I'm seeing too, Steve. Let me
this one is amazing.
I'm going to go to Eddie because we've since stepped it up a bit here. Hi, Eddie. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
My name's Eddie. I'm from Folsom, where it's always awesome.
Hey.
Okay. He's from Folsom, where it's always awesome.
Is that a local saying?
I don't know. Yeah. I grew up by Folsom. Right. I never heard that before.
All right, Eddie, you were in a car accident.
Yes. I was coming on 95 from an exit, and the car stopped in front of me, and I swerved over, and I ended up upside down. I had my seatbelt on. I took my seatbelt off, and I fell right on my head, the star of my brain. And it went down to my junk. It became, I guess, elephantitis or whatever it's called.
Gingivitis.
Yes.
No, so you had elephantitis, an elephantitis-like condition in your nuts.
Injury doesn't. Elephantitis doesn't happen.
It completely causes, Preston, car injuries routinely cause elephantitis.
Okay. So let's go, for the purposes of this story, we'll go with that. Major injuries cause you to have elephantitis.
Okay, and I started hurting my man junk. I went to the hospital.
Man junk.
Right away, they grabbed me and threw a catheter in. They know exactly what was happening, what was going on.
Right.
They put me in my hospital bed. I was there for 8 days. As I was there for 8 days, they kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I became a sideshow at a hospital. Every nurse, doctor came over, pulled my sheets back, and said, oh, my God, they're huge. This one doctor came up to me and said, they're big, but they're not the biggest I've ever seen. They're like a women's basketball. The biggest I've ever seen was a men's basketball. I thought they were going to explode. I said, well, hand me that stick, Doc. I want to break the record. But he didn't hand it to me. So
what stick?
I was the second biggest of all time. They became as big as a woman's basketball.
Okay, so he had various charts that represented basketball sizes, and they would hold them up next to your testicles.
Yes, that's what he was saying. That's what he was saying.
Folsom, ladies and gentlemen.
It's always awesome.
Folsom's always awesome.
Yes. Thanks, Eddie. That's good advice, though, Kathy. Mm-hmm. Remember, besides the device that could break a window if you drive off a bridge, be aware that elephantitis can occur at any time while you're driving.
Casey, give me that stick.
Yeah, it's just kind of sticks just hanging out in the hospital room.
Every doctor carries a stick.
Here's a WNBA ball, not an NBA ball. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. You'll notice the difference in size. Mm-hmm.
Did you see that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, that huge ball in Central Park? That's how big my ball was.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to, John next. John M. Hi, John, you're on the air.
What's up, whores?
Hey!
What's up, man?
I got a real feel-good ball story. Nothing bad.
We would love a good feel-good ball story.
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
I have a third ball, actually.
Oh, wow.
You're a pawn shop.
You have about three?
Yes, I do. About 30 years ago, I was fiddling down there a little bit, and I felt something, and I was like, oh, my God, I have three balls. And my friend's like, you better get that checked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the doctor, and, I was in May. The sun was going down in the background. He's like, all right, drop your pants. And I'm just really embarrassed.
So you had the examination outside?
No, I was just looking out the window.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful evening. And he started fiddling around. He's like, one, two, three. I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow. Get the stick.
Bring the stick over,
please. It's more like 2 and 5.
Where's my nut stick?
It's not like a full ball, and it usually hangs out like left on my back, but sometimes it travels around.
They're stringing my nut stick.
If my gun now doesn't know that, I call it. It wanders aimlessly around my
So, John, what is it?
I'm sure there's
a
condition.
Is it a cyst? Is it like, or is it...
I got it checked out when I got my, what is it, a hysterectomy? Or I got a
you and you had a hysterectomy?
You had a hysterectomy?
I got to tell you something. Your doctor's taking you for a ride.
Yeah. John, are you...
You're going to notice that your menstrual cramps are going to disappear.
Real quick,
from
Folsom.
John, we're here.
Are you from Delco?
No, Northeast Philly.
Okay.
It's closer to Folsom. Okay.
So you have your hysterectomy to remove your third testicle. Go ahead.
Go on.
I don't want to remove it. I want to keep it. That's my go-to.
Hysterectomy is a removal process. I'm sorry. I assumed one of your testicles was being removed during your hysterectomy.
So you know what his balls are like? It's like you ever play that BB game where you want to get the BBs in the eyes and the whole thing where you roll around? That's what he does. So you have a third ball that sort of moves around?
Yeah, it's a gonad that's a nomad.
A gonad that's a nomad.
How many times you use that line?
I like that.
That's the doctor. That line is actually written on the side of the nut stick.
Now, there's got to be there has to be, you know, like you have superfluous nipple and so forth.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
there has
to
be a medical term for having an additional testicle because it is not. Steve, you may not remember this. Thank you for your call, by the way, John. It was wonderful. we were doing an appearance at a place. It was we don't get down to Delaware too often to do appearances, and we were at a nightclub, and I have no idea if this place exists. I don't remember the name of it. It was a calendar raid. There's a ton of people. And at some point, when we were almost done, some dude tells us he's got three nuts.
Yeah.
And he took it out and showed it to us. Do you remember that?
I do not. You'd think I would remember something like that.
In fact,
I remember David Faustino.
I asked him to show it to the crowd, and there were a couple of cops there, and they kind of had some fun with us, and they pretended like they were going to arrest us for,
indecent exposure
and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, but the guy had three balls, man.
Hey, do you remember, Preston, what did it look like? I don't remember.
It looked like a nut sack. I don't know. With three lumps in it. I don't really remember. Polyorchidism.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that's what this guy had. This is actually three testicles.
Okay, polyorchidism. You think that guy had something else?
Yeah, like his had to be a cyst or something.
Is the incidence of more than two testicles in medical literature? The superfluous pamplin, I think it is, for a third nipple? I think that's...
I don't know.
Okay.
You know what? Let's ask the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we do that? Of course you do. What's happening? Anytime you talk about balls. Dr. Mike's Regalado, Penn Medicine and Fox 29 on the phone line. Good morning, Dr. Mike.
Oh, my ball.
Yeah.
Oh, my ball.
Listen.
Yeah.
I think now I just, you know, I go from patient to patient. I come in my office and I hear the strangest, wildest things on your show. So anyway, I think this guy has a scrotal pearl, and I have a patient that had that, and it's they are little benign calcifications in the scrotum, they're nothing to worry about. Now I must tell you though, if anyone out there is listening, you know, if you have a third testicle, you need to get it checked out. And I found one in a patient one time, and I said, "Sir, did God give you three testicles?" "No, I started with two." I said, "Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it." I said, "Well, it turned out to be testicular cancer."
So, right.
So the bottom line is, if you feel something down there that hasn't been there, you need to get it checked out. But I think that this guy has something called a scrotal pearl. I have one patient that I noted that on. And
let me ask you, Dr. Mike, are there occurrences of a third testicle in patients periodically?
I suppose I've never come across one.
Every now and then you have somebody who has a third kidney, so I can't imagine it's, you know, completely.
My father has.
Might be anomalous, but.
Three kidneys. Well,
a lot of people get confused because sometimes they have epididymal cysts and things like that. But they have large scrotums with hydroceles, things like that. But the bottom line is, especially in young men in their 20s, especially in 30s, you need to get that checked out because that's the time when testicular cancer kicks in.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's good advice. So, to the point of like the catcher who got hit in his scrotum, I don't know if you heard the earlier part of the story, he is going to be recuperating for a month. It's obviously a severe bit of damage, correct?
Well, when you take trauma down there, one, it's extremely painful, and you can have all kinds of things. You can have hemorrhages, you can have significant problems, which can not only lead to infertility, but it can also lead to significant trauma. And one, I had a patient jump out of a window and landed on a fence right in the...
Oh, my God.
And created all kinds of problems. Sometimes they have to remove a testicle.
Well, jeez.
Yeah. Dr. Mike, what year of med school do they give you the nut stick?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell.
Isn't that the thing in your lobby that's got the leather strap on it, the nut stick?
I never measured. I never had a stick.
You never had a stick.
I missed out on that.
I don't know. It's probably a different type of medicine. Oh. Yeah, it's probably Eastern.
Nut stick.
Maybe it was a colonoscopy.
It's possible. Oh, a butt stick is obvious, but not a nut stick.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my
anyway.
God.
All right.
Well,
you're the best.
Take care. I love you guys.
Love you.
Love you, Dr. Mike.
I'll see ya.
All right. We'll see you. Dr. Mike's
taking good care of me, by the way, all of us. He was checking on me all weekend.
He's great.
I start
He's none better.
I start a whole host of doctor's appointments this week. Not
for
I'm sick from, but just...
Are you going to have to do another MRI?
Oh, probably.
Who's your sticulist?
I don't have a sticulist.
What's wrong? What are you going to the doctor for?
I'm getting stuff checked out. I'm getting my back checked out, getting my hearing checked out, getting, you know, just, you know,
there's different,
going to the sleep doctor.
There's changes that are, let's just say.
I turned 50. What?
There may be a different Preston coming on the horizon.
Prestolina?
Hey, Prestolina.
I don't know.
How do you girls do it?
Oh, how do you? I spent the weekend in heels, man, so
you did.
Walkabout.
That's right.
Speaking of which, one of the people at the Walk of Miles, this guy, Pope Mike, who's on the line. That is you, isn't it, Mike?
That's your
nutsack. Mike at the Cardboard Classic was the Pope, if you've ever seen the video footage of him. And he came out to the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event. How you doing, Mike?
Doing good. A little bit of blisters on the big toes.
Yeah, I hear you, man, from the heels. All right, so anyway, you have one testicle.
Yeah, back in 2010, something didn't feel right in the shower. And got the urology appointment a month later. He said, in 30 seconds, he says, what are you doing tomorrow? Your one nut's coming out.
Whoa. Wow. It was that soon, that quick of a turnaround.
Yeah, well, they verified it with an ultrasound the next day.
Yeah.
And with an 18-year-old intern, by the way.
So anyhow, you had testicular cancer, so they got it out right away, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're all hunky-dory now.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, if it's caught, it's very, very survivable.
So and you know what? And as Steve was pointing out, gentlemen who, us guys are so creative with nicknames, did you become One Bald Mike from your friends? Or
yeah. When I got back to work, it was like a big party. It's not like a girl when you have breast cancer and everything's.
It's different, yes. It's a different tone.
Yeah.
You're down one nut.
Became one nut Mike in 2 seconds.
Yeah. That's how guys do it. He's got one nut. He's got one nut. He's got one nut. It's called One Nut Mike. Hey, what do you say, fellas?
All right. Old one nut.
Old one nut.
This is interesting. Let me go to Charlie, who had an occasion. Hi, Charlie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, bud?
When I was about 12 years old, I was in a coughing fit.
Yeah.
Smoking something I shouldn't have been smoking.
Uh-huh.
And I sneezed at the same time.
Oh, no.
As I coughed.
Uh-huh.
And I got extreme pain. And my uncle literally carried me to the emergency room, to the Methodist Hospital.
Uh-huh.
They looked at me for 2 seconds and sent me to Jefferson.
Okay.
Apparently, I had some kind of a rupture where it twists and gets stuck in the wall.
Like the guy who was on the diving board, but this is just from you coughing and sneezing at the same time.
This is a ball issue. Take him to the Methodists.
Correct. No, don't go to the Methodists.
Yeah,
go
yeah.
right to Jefferson.
Okay. Go to Jefferson.
When they looked at me, they said it's a rupture and I'm losing circulation. So it was an immediate operation.
Wow.
They gave me Valium and Demerol and sat me in the emergency room.
Yep.
And that relaxed me enough that it came down on its own.
Yeah.
But they still rushed me. They still kept me for a couple days and did surgery. They stitched it to the bag so it wouldn't happen again.
You're using all medical terms.
Yes.
I would say this. They do say there is a self-diagnostic series of things you should check. For example, if you're lying in grass and your balls hit your ass, that's a rupture.
That's a rupture. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I was heard if you were sliding down a wire and your balls catch on fire.
That's a rupture.
That's a rupture.
What happens
or if you're coughing and you sneeze?
Yeah. Well, if you're sliding down a rope and your balls start to smoke, that's also a rupture. Yeah.
So these are the things to remember. They're all in the medical journals.
If you're going down a slide and your balls collide,
that's a rupture.
That's a rupture,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Consult with your doctor. Yeah. Sorry, right. Tennessee.
You may need it. These are just a handful of things that you can do on your own to check and see if you have indeed had a rupture.
I've turned my life around. Yes. Now that I've learned the rules for ruptures.
Let me go over here to Bob. Hey, Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Not too much. The day after my vasectomy, I went to my nephew's birthday party, and my 9-year-old nephew decided that would be a good time for the first time ever to punch me in the balls.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
First time ever?
Oh, my God. So you...
I saw it in low motion, and I was like, oh my God, this is happening right now.
How old is the kid?
He was 9 at the time.
So judging by what I saw Casey and Preston go through, you're at that point, you'd still be in the icing your crotch realm, right?
Yeah, with the peas and everything, yeah.
What were you even doing out of the house, Bob?
Yeah.
Vasectomy is not too bad. You can go out.
Could you guys have gone?
Because a 9-year-old will hit you in
the balls.
I was overprotective the day that, like, the several days after getting my vasectomy. I'm just like, this is my space. Everyone, stay out of it. I'm going to be over here, and I'm not going to move. Don't touch
my balls.
Yeah.
Well, I was moving gingerly, but once he did that, I basically collapsed right onto the floor and didn't move for 15 minutes.
Sure.
So it was awful. And then, you know, my 9-year-old got beat by my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Funny end to the story. My nephew was beaten.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
But the story turned out funny because my 9-year-old, who was totally oblivious to what had happened, was beaten mercilessly.
I have time for another call here. I'm going to go to Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Good. So I was born with what they call a descending testicle.
Okay.
It just never develops and comes down.
Yep.
So they have to surgically remove it when you're, you know, when you're still a baby. So growing up, all I knew was I only had one.
Okay.
And then when you get, like, before puberty and all these kids, like, I got hit in the balls. And I'm like, balls? Why are you calling them plural?
Yeah. What's with the plural?
You know, yeah, because you don't know. You never seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't up. And so people had said this to you, and you eventually, did you have to ask your parents about it? Or
how did I guess it just grew up, and you just start seeing stuff, you hear stuff, and you just realize, like, and then I guess maybe later on they said something about it, and I just realized, like, okay, you know what I mean? But it's never been an issue.
Did you share this information with your friends that you only had one?
No, only girlfriends at the time, and now my wife. You know what I mean?
Andrew, can I see you in the library for a second? There's a, you have one nut, and there are flying squirrels.
Wait a minute. So I was just curious if you ever got the name Old One Nut.
From one nut. She's got one nut.
No, because nobody really knew.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Hey, Andy's got one nut. One Nut Andy. Let's call him that. One, because he's got one nut. Hey, it's a good one.
Thanks, Andrew. Oh, one ball.
Uniball, even. They don't even do that.
Yeah.
Uniball, they have some panache.
Some creativity.
UB.
All right, anyhow. It's a pretty nasty little piece of video, this catcher for the Cardinals.
How fast was the ball traveling? 102
miles an hour?
102 miles an hour.
Out for a month.
Yadier Molina.
You're out of here.
So he is, no kidding, man. That's nasty. All right, anyhow. Thanks for your calls. Appreciate it. Go get the nut stick.
The nut stick.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, Doc, bring your stick in here.
Hey, nurse, bring in my stick.
All right.
One Nut Andy's here.
All right. The nut stick is next to the poop knife. All right. Interesting. Thanks for your calls. I appreciate it.
Preston and Steve.
On 93.3 WMMR.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.